Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for being with us. We're glad to have you here this evening on this September 8th, 2014. And as we go through our agenda, if you have something you'd like to say, you can certainly come up to the mic over here and tell us what you'd like to tell us. And try to keep it to 3 or 4 minutes, if you would. And we would appreciate any comments that you might have. As we begin our meeting now, we'll have our council prayer and then the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag. Most gracious and sovereign God, we humbly come into your presence this evening with praise and gratitude in our hearts for who you are and for the many blessings you have bestowed on our community. You have greatly blessed us. We give you thanks for the opportunity you've given us to serve our city, and we also give thanks for our staff and our employees that do a fine job for us in support of City Council and as they serve our citizens. We thank you for our citizens who are with us this evening and all of our citizens who give so willingly of their time and talents to serve our city in so many important ways, helping to make it the best it can be now and as we look forward. Dear Lord, this evening we ask that you would be with us as we discuss the issues before us and give us guidance and wisdom that we need to make the decisions that are in the best interest of our citizens and that will enhance our community now and for years to come. For it's in your holy name we pray, and we give you the honor and the glory. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To get started, there's one announcement on one of the items on our agenda. Paul Sachs, the applicant for one of the items, let me read a paragraph here that he's given us. I respectfully request second reading of the proposed amendment to the concept plan for property at the intersection of Whiskey Road and Stratford Drive be continued until I evaluate possible drainage issues raised since the first reading that we had in August 11th, 2014. And so we will respect his request. I think Paul is back there in the audience. Thank you. And Paul, you will communicate with Philip, not Philip, excuse me, with the
Stewart.
With Stewart, as to when you want to put this back on the agenda? Okay. All right, thank you. You can tell Philip, too, if you want. But, okay.
We will get a chance to talk with him just a minute or two when it comes up on the agenda.
Sure.
I do have...
Sure.
We need some clarifications here on what the stormwater issues are, because we've had some other properties that, let's say some businesses didn't relocate here because of some stormwater issues in Whiskey, and I want to be sure that we have a definition of what the issue is and how, if the city's involved in it, and or how should the city be involved in it. I'll leave it open both sides.
Okay, certainly. Okay, the first item on the agenda, the minutes, consideration of the minutes of our committee meetings of August 6th and the 25th of 2014, of course, and regular meetings of August 11th, 2014. Do we have a motion and second for approval of those?
I so move.
Second.
Okay, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under presentations, we have one this evening. Yeah, we'll do that too.
Okay.
We'll do that next.
Okay.
Go ahead with this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mayor, thank you very much. We do have a request by the Cumbie Center to place purple ribbons in the downtown area during the month of October, which happens to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And they are also asking permission to place a silhouette display and banner in the downtown area at the intersection of Park and Lauren Street. We received a letter from Barbara Sanders today, or for inclusion in today's agenda. And is Ms. Sanders here? Okay, yes.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. While we were passing, please run with everyone and take one or more, however many you want. My name is Barbara Sanders, and I'm from the Cumbie Center. Each year, we come to council to request and the city's permission to observe Domestic Violence Month. And why is that important that we do that? I want to share a thought with everyone tonight while these are being passed out. And the thought is, I guess we are who we are for a lot of reasons. And maybe we'll never know most of it. But even if we don't have the power to choose where we came from, we can still choose where we go from here. And that's a short quote from The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Stephen Chbosky. And that's an important thought because in observing Domestic Violence Month each year, we want to try to move forward and get the word out, get awareness out to every citizen in Aiken County. And so how do we do that at the Cumbie Center? Well, we look at a lot of different things. One thing we look at is what are the facts about domestic violence? How does it affect us? And we just got the new Violence Policy Center report today. And thankfully, South Carolina is number two now, not number one in the nation. Last year, we were number one for men murdered by women in the nation. And so we look at what's happening within our city, within our county, within our municipalities. So from August the 1st of 2013 to July 31st of 2014, the city of Aiken provided services for 63 domestic violence first cases, 15 domestic violence second cases or more, 14 criminal domestic violence high and aggravated cases, and 5 violations of orders of protection. The Aiken County Sheriff's Office answered 2,098 calls for domestic service. Out of those, 165 citations were written, 186 warrants were served, 33 of those were for criminal domestic violence high and aggravated. The total charges for the county was 384, and there were 3 stalking warrants issued. The city of North Augusta, for the same time, answered 51 calls for family or domestic violence. Of these, 28 resulted in charges and arrests. 5 resulted in both parties being arrested, and 18 were unfounded due to no probable cause. Those are high and alarming numbers. Sure, Aiken County is a big city, is a big county, but we can do better. And how can we do better? And what should we be doing? Should we be educating in our schools, in our elementary schools, in our high schools, our colleges, our churches, our synagogues, everywhere? Yes, we should. Because as we all know, and I try to remind you each year, domestic violence does not discriminate. It doesn't matter if you pick up paper, if you're homeless, or where you are in life, it can happen to you. You may say, oh, no, it won't happen to me, but it can. Because you are not in control of someone else's thoughts or someone else's actions. And that is the primary cause of domestic violence. Someone wanting to take control of someone else's life. Even to the point of, I will kill you. Because that is the ultimate control. So how can we all work together? How can we all get this done? Well, what we're doing at the Cumbie Center is we're asking that you spread the word. Talk about it. Talk about violence in general. Talk to your children. Talk to everyone that you can about violence. Even your high school students, your teenagers. And one thing that we're doing that we passed out to the council is this year we've created a calendar that is free of charge. It'll be on our website. I will send it to you, email it, drop it off by your business, your home, your church, wherever. And in this calendar, we have just a few things that you can do within your family, within your homes, within your communities to promote awareness about not just domestic violence, but all types of violence, elder abuse, fraud, stalking, anything. And we asked the council specifically so that we could put up a physical display, which will include the ribbons downtown in the downtown area and the silhouette with our contact information in the downtown area. Thank you. Any questions? I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Only one silhouette?
No, we're going to put up like three or four. What we normally try to do is do it in a family context so that everybody knows, even children are affected by domestic violence. Men are affected by domestic violence. We see a lot of men at the Cumbie Center, and I know, men, y'all want to be brave and strong and say, I can't go in there and talk to these women and let them know, but it does happen. We have more cases of men reporting now than we did when I started 4 years ago. And another interesting fact is now we're seeing a lot of our elderly population with domestic violence who've been arrested, who need orders of protection. And education, I truly believe, is the way to curb this tendency and let people know that it is against the law and that it will be enforced. And we also try to teach coping skills at the center. Any other questions?
Well, we're just grateful to the Cumbie Center and all of its efforts, and I look forward to seeing the silhouettes around town.
Thank you. We couldn't do it without you all. We at the Cumbie Center, I honestly say, we could not do half of what we do without the generous donation of businesses and private citizens to get our message out and to educate the public. It is you who make us who we are. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your efforts and the rest of the team. I know it's not a one-person team. It's many people helping, as you say. Do we have a motion and a second to approve?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve Parks and Lawrence Street as the area for this ribbon display.
Okay. All right.
Second.
We have a second. Okay. Show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Thank you. And I'd like to recognize our board president, who's here tonight in support, Ben Harm. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Before we go on to the next item on the agenda, we have several people that I'd like to introduce that are in our audience with us tonight. And the first is Dr. Ian Hudson. And let me read a little bit about him. Would you stand up, Mr. Hudson? Currently General Manager for Nuclear Management Partners in Sellafield, LTD, in the UK. His assignment brings together the global experience of URS, AMEC, and Areva for the safe acceleration of cleanup to the most complex nuclear site in Europe. And that collectively involves more than 10,000 scientists and nuclear experts around the world. Dr. Hudson formerly served as vice president of URS on the leadership team with the UK Nuclear Decommissioning Authority. Dr. Hudson is having meetings here, but also interested in hearing from the UK interns and mentors at the Savannah River Remediation, SRS. And two of the interns, the first, Fraser Shand,
John.
Fraser worked under the Nuclear Graduate Program in the UK, which is a two-year rotational graduate program that allows him experience and exposure across the nuclear industry. Fraser is assigned to URS Human Resources in Aiken. And the second is Gemma Goulding. Is that correct? I hope. She's enrolled in the undergraduate nuclear program in the UK and currently assigned to the Savannah River Remediation Radiation Protection at the Savannah River site. We thank you for being with us very much. Dr. Hudson, would you like to say a few words, and your other two folks to also, if they'd like to say something, they may do that.
So I first visited Aiken, I guess, around 1997, and I ended up living here in the US for a couple of years. And when I joined URS a couple of years ago, I came and lived here for almost a year. And one of the things I've always been struck by the experience of living over here is how much it enriches, you know, people's professional career, their personal lives and things like that, just learning from the experience of living in other countries. I've been here a lot of times, and I really, really enjoyed my time here of almost a year. Mr. Mayor, I thank you very much for the kind opportunity to address the council as well. We've had a couple of exchanges between Aiken and West Cumbria a number of times because the communities have lots of very similar issues to face. You know, we have big nuclear sites near us, we have same issues in terms of social issues as well, education, things like that. Leslie Price has helped quite extensively with that. Some of those exchanges, we've had people from Aiken over in West Cumbria, we have people representing the community over here in Aiken as well. So those have led to some real tangible opportunities. So Sandy Jordan has signed an exchange agreement with one of the universities in West Cumbria. Susan Windsor at Aiken Technical College has exchanged curriculum and knowledge about some of the facilities. She's been working with a group called Energis in the UK. Our interns here, a great opportunity. We've got four people coming from the UK over here, four people going back to the UK, spending time with URS projects, but not just URS projects. So a number of people are interested in that. So the UK's National Nuclear Lab are over here this week, visiting the site and looking for opportunities. I absolutely believe there's great opportunities to learn from a community perspective, from a council perspective, the kind of political leaders. We have a very different system. There are some things we'd be proud of and some things that we can definitely learn from your system as well. I especially like the size of your council. if you consider our council in a similar meeting, we would probably have maybe 30 people representing the community. So we can't like that. It's easier to manage. So for me, I'd like to thank you for making our interns so welcome here. I'd like to thank you for the continuing welcome I always get here. I arrived yesterday. I felt like it was really nice to come back here. I really am pleased to be back here. And I'm really pleased we've got the intern program, but I'm also really keen to continue those links as well. You know, broaden them much more community-wise, educationally, because we've got great things to learn from each other.
And I personally want lots of reasons to come back here anyway.
Well, you know, you can come back anytime you want to, you know that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I thought you want a picture of you down here. You
want a picture?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you anyway. And I look forward to continuing the work with you all.
Can we do it with all of us?
With all
of us?
Yeah. I'll take it back to you.
Thank you.
I think we can. Touch even all of them.
Well, they're getting on.
That's good.
Oh, that's
yeah.
In the old business there, item one, approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees. Do we have Mr. Friedenberg?
Yes, Mayor, thank you. We do have three appointments presented for Council's consideration and vote tonight. Councilmember DeWar has recommended the reappointment of Ann Dix to the Community Development Committee for a term that would expire September 2nd, 2016. And Councilmember DeWar has also recommended the reappointment of Don Barnes to the General Aviation Commission for a term that would expire September 1st, 2016. And Councilmember Homoki has nominated Larry Morris to the General Aviation Commission for a term that would expire September 1st, 2016, and he would be filling the position of Stephen Peterson. So for Council Commissioner, the reappointments and appointment of the individuals just named.
All right, very good. Do we have a motion and a second for
approval? So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. How about nominations for our next council meeting?
Maybe? I've got two, Mr. Mayor. I've got Trudy Boyd to continue on the Community Development Committee and Philly Sorensen on the Recreation Committee.
Okay.
Both continuing.
Very good. Anyone else?
And I have one. I have Mr. John Owen continuing his service on the General Aviation Commission.
Okay. All right. So they will be on our next agenda. Item two, a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the concept plan for a property located at Stratford and Whiskey Road.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Again, the title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the concept plan for property located at the intersection of Whiskey Road and Stratford Drive, and this ordinance is the one that you announced at the beginning of the meeting that Mr. Sachs asked to be continued to a later date while he has some additional research done at the property in question.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, if I have a couple of clarifications of with Mr. Sachs, if he could come up, please.
Okay.
Well, and I've got a point of order question. If he has asked that it be continued,
right.
Should it not then, at his discretion, at his request, be continued? You know, we can certainly have those conversations with him outside of the meeting, but you know, there's certain people that were sent home tonight thinking that this was not going to be discussed at all. We had Mr. Grenton standing outside telling them it wasn't going to be discussed at all. So as a point of order, should it be excluded? I mean, he would, I imagine his option would be able to come talk about it all he wants to. But
what I'll do then, I'll write a letter to the city attorney asking for an opinion on it, because this would be the second business we have had that's had some stormwater problems, and one of them left town, and my issue is I want to be sure that there's some the issues get solved. So I'll go through the city attorney to handle it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that satisfied? We need to vote on continuing this issue.
Well,
so do we have a motion?
We have a discussion after we vote or after you make a movement?
I think we have to vote to continue it, or is it just right. drop off?
You need to vote.
A motion to continue it.
Right. I move we continue item.
I second the motion.
Okay, all right.
And I guess we can't discuss it.
Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at 940 Richland Avenue East from light industrial to general business.
Mayor, thank you. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 0.27 acres of land located at 940 Richland Avenue Northeast from light industrial LI to general business GB. Council approved this ordinance at first reading at their August 11th, 2014 meeting. This was, of course, after the Planning Commission reviewed the request at their July 15th meeting. And for council consideration is second reading of this ordinance.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
I make a motion that we approve the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone property at the 940 Richland Avenue East from light industrial to general business.
Second.
Okay, second. Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Under new business, first item, acceptance of FAA grant offer for airport improvement program.
Mayor, thank you very much. As we noted in a July issues and updates memorandum, we were notified by the FAA that we have been awarded a grant for the design and permitting of the terminal apron expansion at the municipal airport. And this grant is for up to $175,325 worth of design costs, and we will be responsible for up to 5% of the grant, with a total outlay of the city of Aiken of no more than $9,740. And the grant application is due back into the FAA for by Thursday, September the 11th. So we recommend council's approval of this grant offer for this project.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we accept this grant offer for the Airport Improvement Program project.
Second.
Second. Okay. Any discussions? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to annex 2.29 acres owned by Triple H Development located at 184 Augusta Road and zone it general business, GB.
Mayor, thank you very much. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 2.29 acres of land, more or less, owned by Triple H Development LLC and located at 184 Augusta Road, and to zone the same general business, GB. The Planning Commission reviewed this request at their August meeting and recommended annexation of this property. So it is now up for council consideration at first reading.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. On page 123, there's a diagram of this property, which shows a connection to the bypass. This is the gas station that had the unauthorized, it wasn't their fault, I guess, but their people were coming out of the bypass directly from the property. And I know that Hitchcock Parkway is a parkway with limited access. So the question, I guess, is for the city attorney, based on this page, if we approve this, are we, number one, approving the access to the bypass, and number two, do we have the authority to approve the access to the bypass?
You do not have the authority to approve access to the bypass, and by adopting this ordinance, you are not granting them access to the bypass. I believe if you look on the second, the page after that, you'll see that that was the Aiken County approved site and landscape plan.
Okay.
In other words, Aiken County approved that plan showing access to the bypass, and DOT told them you could not have access to the bypass.
Okay. All right.
Would you clarify that? I mean, does the city have the plat of the area, and does that show the access to Hitchcock Parkway?
But he was referring to page 123.
Oh, but both of them have it on there.
This is just the package that they presented to the Planning Commission for the annexation approval. The only thing that the city's interested in from looking at this plat is the
boundaries, the
boundary lines, just to show this is the property being annexed into the city of Aiken, and this is the development that's currently existing on this property. The buildings are important.
Okay.
The access to the bypass, the city really doesn't have any authority to approve on that.
Okay, because, you know, we just decided to table the Stratford issue, which also showed access to Stratford, you know, which caused a lot of confusion. Not that, you know, we want to backtrack. Will this access to the parkway cause any confusion in the future?
The difference, if I may, is the Stratford Hall project was actually asking City Council's approval to modify the existing concept plan.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, all you're doing is being asked to annex this particular piece of property into the city. You're not being asked to approve a concept plan.
Okay. Do you recommend that we include a sentence to the effect that this does not constitute authorization of access to the
Just like we talked about with the Whiskey Road issue for that last project, DOT grants this approval, not the city. And if they did want to get the approval from the city, an annexation agreement doesn't grant it. So there's no implied, inherent, or explicit permission for it.
Right.
They would have to ask for it both through us and through DOT. And they, because of the limited access parkway, they wouldn't get it.
Is there a representative from the company here?
There is, yes.
Okay. You're okay with what, you understand what we're saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm fine. Thank you.
From my perspective, just as the attorney, all I'm concerned about is that we're annexing 2.29 acres into the city of Aiken, and that's what that map shows to me.
Well, I just didn't want to cause the property owner any
good
difficulty if he thought that by so doing he was going to get going to have access to the bypass.
Yeah, my concern was, are we also accepting the concept plan that they presented to the county?
No, sir. This property is being zoned general business, and so no concept plan would be required.
Okay.
Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
Welcome to the city.
I'm sorry?
Hey, welcome to the city.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to rezone 1.3 acres on Silver Bluff Road at Hamilton Drive from residential multifamily low density, RML, to general business, GB.
Mayor, thank you. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 1.30 acres of land located on Silver Bluff Road from residential multifamily low-density RML to general business GB. The Planning Commission reviewed this at their August meeting, and the recorded vote was 4-2 recommending approval of the rezoning. The property in 2009, City Council considered a request for rezoning this property, but at that time it was part of a larger parcel. Since then, it has been replatted and is in its current composition as 1.3 acres that are noted in your agenda packet. And for council consideration on first reading is the ordinance to rezone this parcel from residential multifamily low density to general business.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, sir.
What was that?
I move for first to approve. Yes.
Okay.
I second.
Okay. Any comments? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5, the first reading of an ordinance to reduce the balance of the Aiken Corporation consolidated loan with the city of Aiken.
Mayor, thank you. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to reduce the balance of the Aiken Corporation consolidated loan with the city of Aiken. In August 2011, City Council passed Ordinance 08082011, which consolidated three loans of Aiken Corporation set to use for Northside redevelopment and construction and renovation of residences on the north side, and one loan was for painting the spec building at the Willow Run Industrial Park. And also, City Council, by prior ordinance, accepted three Aiken Corporation residential properties in Croslin Park, one at 910 Alfred Street, one at 1407 Aldrich Street, and one at 1143 Alderman Street. The house on Alfred subsequently sold in 2011, so currently Aiken Corporation maintains an equity interest, or that was their purchase price of the remaining houses, of $72,400. And what we did with the Alfred Street house is, when the house was sold by the city in 2011, we cut a check and paid Aiken Corporation $35,000, and we would do the same if this ordinance was not in effect or not being presented. What we would do is just reduce the balance of the 328.8 by $72,400 if the homes at 1407 Aldrich and 1143 Alderman, when they sell, we would not have to pay Aiken Corporation any of the proceeds, because by passage of this ordinance, they would be essentially giving up the equity interest in the three homes in exchange for reducing the balance of this loan. So for City Council consideration is first reading of this ordinance, which Aiken Corporation's Executive Committee has discussed this and will at prior meetings, and at their meeting this Wednesday, September 10th, they will discuss it again and formally make a recommendation on going forward with this.
Okay, sir. Do we have a motion and second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
I have a quick question for our city attorney. As I understand it, basically we're trading the $72,400 that a corporation has an equity on these houses to offset some of the balance of the loan.
Correct.
That we have. does there need to be some reference specifically in the ordinance to a release of lien, or any language specifically stating that they release all claim or lien or what have you against those properties?
We don't have a mortgage lien on those properties, I don't believe. Stuart, may correct me if I'm wrong. This is just a straight non-secured loan, and the promissory note that's attached to the ordinance would be used to replace the current promissory note that they have that evidences the higher balance of the loan.
You're comfortable we don't need any language, any specific language in the ordinance itself about
there are no mortgages.
Okay.
The city just has the promissory note.
Okay. If you're comfortable, I'm comfortable.
Yep.
Okay.
I think if Mr. Biedenbaugh, I'd ask him to look up the information back from our April council meeting, and I think it would be good, either Stuart, if you want to kind of recap from the April meeting, or if you want me to, about what the request had come from Aiken Corporation Executive Board to the city about turning that loan into a grant. And I think we all pretty well agree that it's a loan that probably can't pay itself back, because this goes back about 8 years when things were going good, and now things aren't going so good to where we sold houses and made money on them. So I think this needs to be part of the discussion, and Mr. Brody has a copy of that. But if you would read that from the April 23rd meeting, which was continued at the time, if you'd read that memo, please.
Yes, Councilmember Ebner, the letter's dated April 23rd. It was addressed to the then-City Manager, Richard Pierce. Dear Mr. Pierce, at the most recent Aiken Corporation Executive Committee meeting, a quorum present voted unanimously to recommend that the consolidated loan in the amount of $328,800 approved by Aiken City Council via Ordinance 0808-2011 be converted to a grant for the purposes of increasing housing density in Aiken. Sincerely, Wade M. Brody, Chairman.
Thank you. What this, at the time, this was at the, brought up at the meeting, we were discussing having, if you will, committee meetings in relation to Crossland Parks later in the year, and we have now had some of those meetings. And so this has come back up again. And it's a kind of a plus and minus discussion of this item when we talk about it at Aiken Corp. And so my understanding is we pass this on first reading, then at the executive board on Wednesday we would further discuss this to see which way the board wanted to go on. And so if Mr. Brody is here, if he wants to make any comments also.
I'm not sure I understand what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm not either.
We're reducing the loan
by
72,400.
Right.
Okay. If that's the motion on the board, I'm ready to vote.
That's the motion on the board.
Okay, I'm ready to vote.
I am too.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second already, so any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. Item 5, first reading of an ordinance to approve the sale of 1407 Aldrich Street, Northeast. Move that, please.
Mayor, thank you. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance approving the sale of 1407 Aldrich Street, Northeast. This house has been a City of Aiken employee, Charles Means, has offered to purchase this house for either $72,000 or appraised value, whichever is lower. He qualifies for some down payment assistance via a state grant. And in the agenda packet, you see the signed contract and a pre-qualification letter that he qualifies for a mortgage to purchase the property. And staff and the interim city manager have reviewed this purchase and recommend to council approval on first reading of this ordinance.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I make a motion that we approve the first reading of an ordinance to approve the sale of 1407 Aldrich Street, Northeast.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Okay. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I was contacted today about some issues on the, from the realtor side. And if you look at page 165, you can see that, and I'm not sure that this is exactly the focus, but it was signed by the proposed buyer on the 9th, but 10 days later signed by the city. Now, the person authorized, the person in the city clearly authorized to sign these kinds of agreements is the city manager. There does not seem to be anyone designated as a backup. For example, last week, my thought is that if this came up last week, the assistant city manager would have been able to sign it. But I'm not sure that you feel that way, Stuart, but because this is delaying the process. If the city manager, and we're working with an interim city manager who may not always be available. So the issue is if we're selling property at Crossland Park and the interim city manager is not available, how do we get to the point where we authorize the interim city manager to approve it just to keep the ball rolling?
Right.
It's two readings, so it's not like it's going to be a major problem.
Well, can the interim city manager not delegate that authority without approval to do that?
Well, I guess that's what I'm asking, but
that's pretty.
I mean, to be frank with you, I guess in this case, part of it was, I think, the timing and that we knew we were not having a second meeting in August. But yes, that is something we can discuss with the interim city manager when he returns tomorrow, that in the future, with his availability, obviously he's not, I mean, he puts in a lot of hours for an interim, but he's not, he doesn't have the normal office hours that a regular full-time employee would have, and certainly discuss that with him so we can avoid this from occurring.
it doesn't seem like it matters whether the city manager or the assistant city manager signs it when it's not binding until we approve it anyway.
That's right. And we've got to do two readings. So that's why I guess my point is let's not wait for one or the other to be around. As long as one of the two of them signs it and gets the process moving, that's the key thing.
For something as specific as this, where it does require ultimately council approval, I'd be fine then with the assistant city manager also being able to sign.
I would too.
Well, one would think that that would just be part of the procedure, because if a city manager's on vacation or something, typically it would just roll over to the next person in charge.
Is that part of the procedure right now?
I don't know, but I would think it would be.
Yeah, they have a procedure where the assistant city manager takes over if he needs to.
Yes. In this case, I think it was not necessarily between the 9th and the 19th. There were, it wasn't necessarily that Mr. LeDuc was gone that whole time, but I know there was, I think, a little bit of back and forth. But I think we could certainly make sure this doesn't happen again in terms of a time lag, just because the interim city manager is not available.
And the other thing is that I'm not comfortable not having an appraisal. Us being asked to approve, we really know what the price is.
Well, that's what I was about.
We will know the second reading, but we don't know today, and we're approving the sale.
And even on page 166, if you could refer to that, the purchase price originally was $68,500, and that's been striked out, and $72,000 was put in its place.
He made the offer at 68.5.
Okay.
We countered at 72, but gave him the option of it being lower if the appraisal was lower. And so my only point of question, and I'm actually very tickled to death that Mr. Means can and buy this and will buy this house. I don't want to impede that in any way, but I want to just suggest for council to think about if that appraisal came in at some number, is there some minimum point where we would suddenly have cold feet about selling it? And I'm not so inclined to say I would, but...
Let me just say, there's 12 homes that is available in Crossland Park. We're trying to get rid of these homes. And if anyone knows in this audience someone that needs a home that is affordable between the... Is Pat Cunningham up in somewhere? Pat will negotiate the deal, but around $72,000, then that can be discussed. We do have an interest with a program that's been initiated through Savannah River Remediation that will employ veterans at Savannah Riverside under a pilot program. We hear that veterans also need housing, and had Robert Murphy out in Carlson Park this past week looking, and it appears that we may have a program with the city coming along with the mayor with some veterans partnering with us, and that will give us a way to place some people into some affordable homes. And for those of you who may think negative about Carlson, and Gail will attest to this because this is her district, Crossland, we're making Crossland a safer place, a safer community. And so don't buy into all the negative things we hear about Crossland Park, but you're going to see something that we're all going to be proud of. We went through those changes with Tool Hill, and now Tool Hill is an area that we can be proud of, and Crossland will get to that same status. So send somebody the city's way and let them tell them there's a house that's and these are three-bedroom homes.
They
that's,
are.
Nicely located in some of these areas. So.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You're like a good sales lady.
Yeah.
This is an unpaid commercial.
We don't need to pay anybody for marketing unless he does it all. So.
Well, will we have the appraisal by the second reading?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any more comments? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Under petitions and requests, the first item is approval to fund a Northside study by the Urban Institute of South Carolina. Mr. Beavenbach, please.
Mayor, thank you. One of several committees that have been set up since the beginning of the summer involves our Northside And we have had two meetings. The most recent one was approximately 2 weeks ago. And one of the things, and this also, we were speaking of Aiken Corporation earlier. Aiken Corporation has discussed also the how they believe it's important to have a study done for the north side for revitalization. And we have looked around in our interim city manager and one of his other jurisdictions he's been working in has worked with the Urban Land Institute of South Carolina, and for $10,000 they will bring a panel of experts from around the state to come for a two-day meeting. They will tour the area, speak with stakeholders and citizens in the area and other community leaders to formulate a plan of action, which they will then deliver in writing approximately 6 weeks after they come. And that will be used to galvanize and give us a path forward in pursuing our North Side revitalization project or initiative. As I say, the cost will be $10,000, which is sort of a turnkey operation, which will include their food, lodging, and transportation, as well as their time and expertise. So for council consideration is approval to fund this study by the Urban Land Institute of South Carolina.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any comments?
Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to inform everyone that I did speak with some of the residents of Crossland Park just to get their thoughts about the Urban Land Trust Institute coming in and doing this study. And I think Mr. Yantz is here tonight. He was in that meeting, and Mr. Means, and I think Michael Dale Couch. They were all in the meeting. They were all very interested in having this study done. They are proud of Crossland Park. They are proud to live in Crossland Park. They believe in Crossland Park, and they feel like this is going to enhance the quality of life, not only for the people in Crossland Park, but Northside as a whole. So they are here tonight. I'm glad to see them here. And they're very interested in us going forward with this North Side study.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
I would just point out it's the North Side, not just Crossland Park. It's
right,
the North Side.
Yes,
right.
That is correct.
And that's why I said not only improve the quality of life in Crossland Park, but North Side as well, as a whole.
Right. Very good. Very good.
Now, Grant, I raise my hand. Raise your hand.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second for approval. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
And we will certainly let council know as soon as we have the dates scheduled. You recall we had several dates available to choose from.
Okay. Item two is a request from the Concerned Ministers Fellowship. Mr. Biedenboe.
Mayor, thank you. Tonight, Reverend Paul Bush, the chairman of the Concerned Ministers Fellowship, is here to discuss their request for restroom facilities at Perry Park and Eustace Park. And attached to my cover memorandum is a letter that he sent to Mr. LeDuc. And he also, I believe, is we have as a handout that he brought today, a letter that he is written to the school superintendent, Dr. Beth Everett, as well as the deputy superintendent, David Caver, regarding restrooms at Perry Park. At this time, due to the fact we now have a capital project sales tax manager on staff, and we feel like we're moving forward on the Eustace Park Senior Youth Center plans and ultimate construction, we don't believe standalone restrooms at Eustace Park are necessary at this time. The Perry Park is, I guess, what council could discuss tonight, and Eustace Park as well. But as a comparison, we looked at we recently constructed restrooms at our Citizens Park Sprayground. These restrooms would are a little bit larger than ones that perhaps we would want to construct at Perry Park, as they have changing rooms due to the spray grounds. But those restrooms cost $51,131, and these restrooms, would cost a different amount, most likely a little less. One thing, in talking with Mr. Caver at the school district, anything built on school property, should council consider this, would require it be approved by the State Board of Education or State Department of Education's Office of School Facilities Guidelines. So that is something we would need to, we would certainly review those guidelines and to get us a good good price going forward should council approve. But again, Mr. Reverend Bush is here with this request tonight, Mayor.
Okay, it's Reverend Bush, would like to speak, sir. To our Honorable Mayor and to your cabinet, to you and my fellow citizens of Aiken County. I think Stuart did a great job on explaining basically what our request is and where we stand at this point. Simply, we understand that the Houston Park complex that is going to be built will encompass what we're asking for there. But at Perry Park, that park is used so much now, and it has brought a lot of opportunity to the north side. But the problem we're having is that with the very large venue that's going on out there and the multitude of people that come out there, that there are no bathroom facilities. And whenever bathrooms have to be used, people either have to go down the street or to another business. Sometimes they have to walk down to Smith Hazel and something is going on there, then it's interrupting there. So after being to several events that have been there, talking with many of the citizens and even talking with some of the city council, some of the school district, and everybody says, hey, it sounds like a good job. It seemed like the only problem was no one had asked for it. And so often we have not because we ask not. And so simply we're just here to ask. This might be grand if we have bathroom facilities there at Perry Park.
Paul, I agree that, yes, we don't need them at Eustace Park right now, because when the facility is built there, they will have the restrooms. But I do attend many events at Perry Park, and I agree. I see portalets now and then in various locations, but and sometimes it's just too hot to walk up to Smith Hayes, or sometimes it may not be open. But I do agree we need them at Perry Park. I worry at first about safety, because I always worry about safety. And if these bathrooms are placed there, then I hope the city is able to, and I think you said something about set them where they are locked and unlocked. But also, I would like to see that just done during an event, because I think about all of the kids that come through that area and adults as well. If they stop in there and nobody's monitoring them and they're open, I worry about little kids going in and other people going in behind them, and I shudder to think that that could present a potential danger. But we do need the bathrooms. I want them out there. Shout Fest is this weekend, and probably about 1,000 people will be out there, and there will only be, what, 3 portalets available? That's a lot of people to so little portalets, and we definitely need them, and I appreciate the concerned ministers coming forward and asking.
Well, thank you. And it does become a little embarrassing when we have guests come from other states.
Certainly.
And then ask to use the bathroom, we have to try to find a cousin's house.
What did you
how many are we asking for?
Well, let me.
You got to have more than one each. I mean, ladies need one.
It'd be large enough for multiple stalls.
Yeah, I understand, but we got to make sure that there's enough. I mean, one each is not going to cut it based on what you're telling me with the crowd.
Odell Weeks has 3. I think 2. Would suffice in each, or possibly 3, I don't know, but 2 would suffice. given the size of the park.
Buildings or stalls?
Two stalls.
In I'd each. Put three.
Two, I'd say maybe yeah. three. No less than two for females and males in the other. No less than that.
The details that staff can take care of. But
right.
In coordination, we need to make sure if we're going to spend the money, let's do it right.
But mind you, the conversation has been with a possible restroom and concession stand. So keep that in mind as we make plans, and just not a restroom, but a concession area where there could be greater use of the, of that facility.
Are you talking maybe something similar to what Aiken High School has?
That building, that
yes,
block building?
That.
Uh-huh. Yes,
that. And to go back to your point, Council Member Diggs, about the locks, it would be an automated locking similar to what we have at the spray ground, to where you can automatically, they'll open at a certain time and then close. And, of course, as events warrant, could be set to have a special time if an event was going to run over. And like the spray ground, like we're doing with facilities, we would have cameras on the, of course, just the exterior of the building for security purposes. That's what we've been doing with our those sort of facilities that we build.
Well, I wanted a restroom there in 1978 when I was practicing football with two of the Perry boys. So I've been thinking it needed to be there a long time ago. So nobody asked.
That's right.
One other thing, whose responsibility would this come under? Is it PRT to look after it? So they would be the lead person to do this, and then public safety would be either called or be on their rounds or whatever it'd be. So it'd be.
Yes, there was certainly issues related to public safety, yes, and but PRT would be maintaining of the facility.
Okay, and it is capital project sales tax, too.
That is correct. It would be capital project sales tax, too. And in speaking with Interim City Manager LaDuke, there could be other potential fund sources, but if it were capital project sales tax money, it would the most logical place would be out of for Northside Park, which is listed on the ballot as part of the $2 million line item.
Right. That's right. That's the extra money, the Northside Recreation.
That's correct. We've spent, I think, $2,700 of that.
Yep.
And that's what it's for.
Yep.
So the next step would be developing an actual plan and budget and bringing that back to us?
Yeah, well, and also we would want to go ahead and begin discussions with the school district, because we would need a memorandum of understanding, since it is their property, with the understanding that it would be, we would bear the cost with the CPST money. And in initial discussions we've had with the school district officials, the deputy superintendent, they don't expect that to be an issue in terms of what the school board. He feels sure, you know, given that we're the ones coming with the money and will be the maintenance or doing the maintaining, they shouldn't have any objection. But again, it has not been presented formally to the board either.
You have a letter already.
Yes, well, we have a letter written that we have submitted. Yes, we have given each of you a copy of that. Plus, we talked with Dr. Everett as well as with Mr. Carver. And so they are saying the same thing. We know that they do have a school board meeting on tomorrow. But as I said, they aren't looking to have any problems with it. So it's just a matter of submitting a letter of request.
But I would imagine they should see it as a benefit.
They do.
They have soccer practices and soccer games out there. Even in the evenings, I see them all the time. So where do they go when they have to go? Just saying.
We just need to make sure that if they have any unusual requirements from the education department, as we might expect, that significantly increase the cost, we need to discuss it.
And Dr. Everett mentioned that because of the school guidelines that we have to conform to for that request, it may run the cost up a little bit more than normally.
Yeah, and I think we ought to be made aware of that. We need a motion to approve
okay.
this?
Okay, I think not. That's scary.
You've got the guidance you need, don't you, Stuart?
I do.
Yeah. It's going to come back to council with plans.
When we get we're ready with an estimate, we can proceed as we do with other capital project sales tax items.
One last thought, though. If there's going to be a concession component, which is not a bad idea, but if there's going to be that, we need to figure out how you provide access and use and you know how that's managed or controlled.
Yes, and we will certainly do that in our due diligence.
Preparation.
Okay. Item three is
thank
a request.
You. Thank you.
Sorry?
It's the mayor and council.
Thank you, Pastor. Item three, requests by Woodside Property Owners Association to be refunded for cost incurred from winter storm packs. Speedy's law.
Mayor, thank you very much. We received a request from the Woodside Property Owners Association, Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association. During winter storm packs, Woodside accrued a lot of storm damage and debris, including leaners and hangers from trees, and they expended funds totaling $303,931.60. They approached the city to inquire about timing of when the debris would be removed from the roadside and the rights of way. Our staff went in and did some clearing. The initial aftermath of the storm, which was February, the storm event was February 12 through 14, and we did have some of our staff go in, but subsequently further conversations with city staff, they, in their belief, they felt that it would take the city crews several months to ultimately collect debris and remove it from the residential, from the neighborhood. This work that they're asking for reimbursement for is related to mostly to work done along Woodside Plantation Drive and Eastgate Drive, and there was a little bit of work done on Mockernut, but the other storm debris in Woodside, this does not include the storm debris that our mutual aid partners from Greenville picked up at our residential service addresses within Woodside. Now, the Property Owners Association filed a reimbursement with FEMA, but however, FEMA did not reimburse any of their storm expenses because FEMA policy deemed the POA not an eligible recipient for reimbursement, because they are classified under the category homeowners associations and residential facilities, and generally those are not eligible for FEMA reimbursement. But FEMA and the South Carolina Emergency Management Division informally told the POA to request the reimbursement from the city, and there are a myriad of options for council to consider that could have made a rather lengthy cover memo. And the two options presented as sort of a discussion starter or discussion point using various FEMA calculations. One would be on a percentage basis, similar to how the city was reimbursed by FEMA for debris collection, depending on whether it was the first 30 days or days 31 to 90. And I do want to say that the Property Owners Association's contractors, Cold Creek and Weiss Tree Service, they both were complete. I guess Weiss Tree Service was in there the longest, and they were finished, I believe, by March the 30th. Using those calculations, based on the information we have from the Property Owners Association, that reimbursement could be up for up to $247,129. Or another option, our FEMA caseworker calculated the city's reimbursement, it cost the city of Aiken $10.37 per cubic yard to collect all of our yardage around the city. And using that method or that option, that cost could be up to $76,738. Again, those are sort of felt like in presenting this to council, those will be good discussion starting points or what have you. But the Property Owners Association is recommending, they noted in their application very clearly how much they spent. And our city attorney tells us that should council approve reimbursement to the Property Owners Association, there will need to be a budget amendment ordinance at two subsequent meetings, of course, with two readings to be that will be required before any funds are dispersed. So anyway, for council consideration is a request by the Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association to be reimbursed for costs incurred from winter storm packs.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to make a motion here that we suspend the rules so that we could discuss this.
Second.
This issue.
I don't think you have to do this. This is a petition. We can just discuss it.
Okay.
Never mind, Mr. City Attorney. This is a petition.
Okay.
We're ultimately, you're not going to make any final decision tonight other than to provide guidance as to what you want to do going forward.
Correct. Uh-huh. Yes, the same as we've done on the other petitions before this. And I think Mr. Mayor has a good idea to put the discussion up.
Okay.
And Ms. Hughes is here to represent them.
Okay. Ms. Hughes, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Nancy Hughes, and I'm the president of the Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association. Thank you very much for fitting us into your agenda tonight. What I would like to do is just read for you the contents of the letter that I sent to Roger LaDuke back on August 23rd on behalf of the Woodside Plantation Property Owners. And then I would like to correct what I believe is a misleading inaccuracy in the agenda description of the Woodside issue. So let me start with the letter to Mr. LaDuke. The contents are as follows. Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association is requesting reimbursement from the City of Aiken for costs incurred as a result of the ice storm from February 10th to the 14th. All roads in Woodside Plantation are in the City of Aiken. The city and county are responsible for emergency, medical, fire, water, sewer, stormwater, and school buses in this area. The Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association supported the City of Aiken crews in removing debris from main access roads for emergency services. Once access was established, the POA supplemented city crews in clearing the right-of-way on major roads. The work was coordinated with the City of Aiken Public Services Director. The cost incurred by the POA to remove debris, dangerous hanging branches, and broken trees from our main access roads was $303,931.60. I also attached a summary of all the costs and the breakdown. The POA has already applied to FEMA for reimbursement for our ice storm cleanup expenses. We were denied because South Carolina Emergency Management Division determined that no homeowner associations would be eligible for reimbursement. Our SCEMD and our FEMA caseworkers recommended that we apply to the City of Aiken for reimbursement. In addition to the above cost to clear our main access roads, Woodside has spent nearly $86,000 additional to date on other ice storm cleanup work. We are not asking for reimbursement for those costs as we believe this work was our responsibility, not the city's. On behalf of the Woodside Property Owners Association Board of Directors, we sincerely appreciate your consideration of this reimbursement for our debris removal. And one other thing I wanted to identify. When I read the agenda, there's one statement that popped out at me, and it's the statement that reads, the Woodside Plantation Property Owners Association wanted this work completed before the start of the Masters Tournament. Not sure where that came from, but that is so far from the truth. In all of our meetings, board meetings among ourselves, meetings with the city, meetings with FEMA, meetings with SCEMD, this never came up. The Masters was never an issue. It was not a factor in any of the decisions that the board made for cleanup. We were not thinking 2 months down the road. We were thinking immediate cleanup. right after the ice storm, Woodside Plantation Drive, Eastgate Drive, which are our main thoroughfares, were impassable. Trees all over the roads. We needed to clear that up so that our residents could get in and out of Woodside, so that the city could get in and address the residential streets. So I don't know where that came from, but it really is not correct. Are there any questions I can answer for you?
Ms. Hughes, a couple of things. I think, are you saying that your roads were impassable?
Yes, those two roads.
The city did not come in there at any point in time and push the limbs and what have you to the side?
The day after the storm, we had Cold Creek come in, and they helped us get the stuff out of the street and just put it on the sides of the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Then later we
mm-hmm.
had Weiss Tree Service come mm-hmm. in and do that.
Yeah. Well, this really gives me a real problem, this whole issue. I'm sorry it does, but it does. I think you were told, at least I was told, that during the conversation with Tim Coakley later, that he would certainly get to Woodside. But his first obligation was to get to the areas in the city, the public roads, not the private roads. And that's what I understand he told someone, I don't know who it was.
We did talk to Tim Coakley. He was extremely helpful working with us. He was a great person to work with. And what we were told, the priorities for the city were emergency areas first, residential areas second, and then other roads. Now, our main roads, Woodside Plantation Drive and Eastgate Drive, would fall into the other roads category because there's no residences on Eastgate Drive, and there's very few residents on Woodside Plantation Drive.
Right.
So we knew this was third in line to get cleaned up. And Mr. Coakley actually said that it would be likely a very long time, could be months, before the city would get to those roads. I don't disagree with the city's priorities. That made perfect sense. It just, in this particular case, wasn't going to work for Woodside.
I wish Mr. Coakley was here, because it'd be nice to have both sides, talking about this issue. And he's not in town. I can't vote on this issue until Mr. Coakley is here. To be able to tell his side of the issue.
I'd like to hear his explanation also. I'd like to hear what he has to say also.
Absolutely. I don't think it would be fair, really. We need to hear all of it. This is an awful lot of money. And the problem, one of the problems I see, if we do this, if we pay anything for that matter, Calmia Landing. They apparently did their own. And that's a gated community, as you know, and private roads. And it bothers me also, what are other people going to say when they had their roads? I mean, as we all know, there was debris all over every road. And you just had to be where we are to get to understand how much it was, how bad it was. We were getting all kinds of comments every day. Where are you? You know, our folks did a great job, I think, with what they had and the type of problem it was. It was much worse than the one that happened 10 years prior.
So I understand, we believed that we were assisting the city. Given that we were told it could be a very long time, we came in and decided we'll take care of these two roads ourselves and make it easier for the city to come in and. When they have time and get to the rest of the streets.
There are several frustrations that are involved with this, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I'm not sure that Woodside was fairly treated from the get-go. Councilmember Ebner and I asked the city manager to let us know when our FEMA meeting was going to be held, and he didn't. And he didn't let Woodside Homeowners Association know when the meeting was. There's been some issues on our side that that I think would support this request. I'm at a loss as to why we can't simply pay this and then submit it to FEMA.
FEMA's already rejected it.
FEMA's rejected it from the Homeowners Association.
FEMA claims anyway.
I don't know for a fact, but I think the deadline has passed for FEMA claims.
I personally told the city manager that you should contact this person who's an expert at dealing with homeowners associations and had a track record of successfully processing claims. Nothing happened. There's some issues, I think, on our side that their roads are no more important or no less important than any other road in the city of Aiken, but they're important.
Well,
and we were all frustrated with the pace of roads.
And you're exactly right. And so, you know, I would support, if we get to that point, I would support, you know, some reimbursement for the work out there, because their roads are no more important or no less important. You know, the important thing to me is ultimately how much. And we need to think that we should pay no more for that work and no less for that work than we did for every other road and residents in the city of Aiken. You know, speaking only for myself, but and you know, I've done the calculations. I think I know what those numbers are. But ultimately, we should, you know, treat Woodside Plantation Owners Association and those roads the same as we would have treated any other road within the city.
I have several questions to ask you, Ms. Hughes. Did I understand you to say that these roads are private roads, or they're owned by they're in the city's?
They're private roads, but the arrangement we have with the city is that they will, on a regular basis, pick up trash and debris. And the agreement right after the ice storm was that the city would clear all the city roads.
Okay.
Well, and including not just the city roads, but including these roads, the private roads.
Any roads that were in the city.
Well,
and these roads are in the city.
Yeah, but they're not city roads. They're still private roads.
Right.
But
the private roads.
Those, yeah,
roads, yeah, so private,
yeah.
Roads.
But the city, but Tim said he was going to clean them. Yeah.
Well, we put the Greenville people in there for a couple of weeks. Held them, unfortunately, to 8 hours per day instead of working them overtime like everybody else was, which, again, made absolutely no sense. But
well, the question is, how much would it have, even, you know, forget about the timeline, but how much would it have cost the city to get the roads cleaned up in Woodside?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not a redheaded stepchild out there. I mean, somebody mentioned Mockernut Circle. Mockernut Circle was absolutely blocked off. And right in front of my house, a couple of trees, you know, that big, and then coming out the other way, it's a circle. Both the sides were blocked.
I can tell you how much it would have cost the city.
Okay.
Our costs, and Stuart, please correct me if I'm wrong on these things. Our cost per cubic yard of debris citywide was $10.37 per cubic yard. After reimbursement, when all was said and done, our cost worked out of $1.82 per cubic yard for everything that we did. $1.82 is what the city is out of pocket for all the debris per cubic yard. So if you were to multiply $1.82, which is what we spent everywhere else in Aiken, times the amount of debris, which was how much, Stuart?
You're talking about how much for Woodside or just for the city as a whole?
How much debris is on the request?
Oh, 7,400, I believe, was the cubic yardage.
Yes, yes.
So 7,400 cubic yards times $1.82, which would be...
So what you're saying is a contractor would go pick up those 7,000 yards for $7,000.
No,
highly unlikely.
Listen to what I'm saying. I said we would have spent $10.37. We would have been reimbursed $8.55. The net cost to the city is $1.82.
Well, the city didn't lose any money on this at all. They had a profit.
I understand. That's because of the fact that we paid for guys working that we didn't have to pay out of our budget. But our net cost, I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. He said he wanted to know the numbers. Our net cost is $1.82 per cubic yard. Am I wrong, Stuart?
I think you need to work.
It makes absolutely no sense.
That makes it.
Well,
if we spent $10.37 and we reimbursed $8.55, what's the difference?
Well, we started, the first time we really talked about putting money to cubic yards was when we were dealing with leaners and hangers. I mean, we were just talking cubic yards in terms of our people picking them up. And that includes labor cost and equipment cost and so forth. I mean, I'm not sure.
Well,
I have a question, Hughes.
when this was decided, I'm concerned about the contractor, whether the discussion evolved with to get some bids, or do we automatically go to Coal Creek and the other contractor without getting bids and then coming to the city and say, let's discuss this and the arrangement. We're going out to do this because for safety reasons our streets need to be cleared.
Kind of all of the above. Actually, it was an emergency situation. I mean, the day after the storm, most of Woodside had trees all over the place and the roads were impassable. Coal Creek, we have a long-standing business relationship with them, so they were kind enough, they don't do this work, but they were kind enough to come in and help us just get the stuff off the road. Weiss Tree Service, actually, there were no local tree services available. They were all gone and charging premium rates. Weiss Tree Service came from Iowa, and Woodside Club Corps, which owns Woodside Country Club, went out for a national bid to find somebody to come and clean the golf course area. We talked to the Woodside Country Club people, got a handle on what they were doing and their price and everything, so we asked them to give us an estimate. We told them what we needed to have done. They gave us an estimate. We had a local landscaper take a look at the estimate, said it sounded reasonable. And we said, do it. We just didn't have a lot of time to go out, you know, for bid and find somebody that would even be willing to write us a bid.
So it's a golf course included with this?
No. That was separate. They worked for the golf course, and when they were done with the golf course, they came and worked for the POA.
What about landscaping costs? Was there any repair done on landscaping at all embedded
in
this cost?
Yes, but that's not included in any of this number.
Okay.
Mrs. Hughes?
Yes.
When you decided that Woodside would just go over and clear the debris on their own with their contractors, did you talk to anybody at the city that agreed that you would be reimbursed for it?
No, we didn't. This had to happen. But we were talking to Tim Coakley all along.
Mm-hmm.
He was aware that we were doing this. We thought we were helping.
We have Cameo Landing sitting in the audience as well. And Cameo Landing residents have said to me that if you pay them, we want to be paid too. And then I'm getting other calls saying that if you pay them, I've got some bills to submit here too. So I'm just wondering about, one, doing what's right and what's fair.
Yeah.
And secondly, once we start something, there is a precedent in terms of being established. So that's why I'm asking the questions that I'm asking.
All right, well, let me ask this question. The city's responsibility was to pick it up. And if we look at the history, when the pickup was finished here on the 30th of March, the city wasn't halfway through its pickup on the regular roads. The pickup would have been out in probably at best the end of May or early June.
That's correct. Yeah, we finished pickup around June the 6th or
right.
June 5th.
Okay. So the first thing is the city is responsible for picking it up. And people can say, well, they're private roads and so forth and so on, I can't drive on them. But I think we need to remember there's 261 miles of roads in the city. There's 41 in Woodside. There's a dozen or so in Kalmia that are private roads. The majority of the roads in the city of Aiken belong to the SCDOT, and there's 150 or 60 miles of roads that belong to the state. And you add another private road, so that the city only had about 30 to 40 miles to pick up if we would have followed the correct procedures. And I think we're well aware of that. And then let's don't forget that those 50 miles of roads, all of those citizens pay all of the taxes to the city. There's no discount. And so that's roughly 40, maybe 45% of the city roads. And I don't think Mr. Grinton wants his budget reduced 45%. We couldn't do it anyway. But, I mean, I'm giving you perspective that there is money there available. There is precedent for cities all up and down the Gulf Coast paying for homeowners to pick up their debris after hurricanes, and most of it's been hurricanes. The other part of this is I was invited to the county kickoff meeting with FEMA, and I brought up POAs, the two that we do have within the city limits, and there's some in the county also.
We've got more POAs, just the two private. You're talking about the two gated community POAs.
Gated communities. And after the meeting, I asked the guy from the SCEMD about it, and he said the same thing we're saying. They probably won't approve it, but you ought to reimburse it through the city. Our current city manager was advised of that. And as Mr. DeWar said, we weren't invited to any of these public meetings. And I knew when they were and supposed to be, and so after the fact, I checked with them. And then when Ms. Hughes gets turned down, they tell her the same thing. You should submit this through the city. And that was turned down a number of times. So I think there's some precedent here. And I agree that the other property owners in the Property Owners Association, you know, if they have the legitimate cost, they should be reimbursed. It does open up a little bit of Pandora's box. Basically, Aiken County was finished by the end of March or early April. And so I think there's some precedent here that we took a lot longer to do things, so people, you know, begin to help out a lot more than normal, so to speak. I think we need to look at all of the facts here. Our history is not the best on this. However we want to proceed, but I think we have enough pictures of what the roads look like and the number of miles, and we could get somebody to estimate it, and I think they're going to come up with more than $1.82.
Well, I'm not saying that we shouldn't reimburse them for road cleanup. I do think they did help the city of Aiken in doing it. I'm saying that somewhere between $303,000 and the $15,000 number, whatever the $1.82 would work out to be, somewhere between there is the right number. And it's just a matter of them figuring out what that is. So what Mr. DeWar said, so it's no more or no less, no different, no better, no worse than what we spent on any other road in the city of Aiken. All I'm talking about is making it equal.
I don't have a problem with that. And I think if we don't trust the numbers that we're using here, Mr. DeWar and I went out numerous days and talked to the contractors working for the state. And it is, in the beginning, it'll cost $35 to $45 a cubic yard to get started because they're cutting trees, clearing the roads, and so forth. But as you get to the end, you know, the cost per yard gets down for a few bucks a yard because all you're doing is having a truck pick it up and hauling it off. There is a graduated scale to this without a doubt. And I think when Greenville was in the neighborhood, I don't think they were running many chainsaws. They were picking up the stuff that was already on the sides of the roads. So basically you have one operator, maybe two on a truck. So I'm concurring what a number of the council members are saying. It may be between the two numbers. Did we pay more because of the market demand? I think everybody was paying more. You know, everybody's busy, so if you get somebody to do something, they're going to cost you more. So
we did need to pay premium rates, and Woodside doesn't have any equipment, so we necessarily needed to hire a contractor that had equipment. Of course, that was built into the rate too.
Well, the work that was done with the city, it was required that work be evaluated for pre-clearance to pre-qualify for reimbursement. Am I right? Based on my conversation with DOT, that all that work was
we did have to have the work monitored with load tickets and so forth per our understanding of the FEMA guidelines. Yes,
FEMA had to pre-qualify and predetermine whether that work would be paid.
I think that may be because you're a municipality and we were not, because when we were first filling out our FEMA applications, they didn't say anything about that.
Wow.
I got a question. Could somebody explain the two paragraphs up from the signature element on it?
Which you're talking about, the one that begins our staff?
Yes.
Essentially, just for information purposes, to date, we have been reimbursed a total amount of $1,295,695, and we are awaiting our final payment from FEMA of $389,982. And then our FEMA-related expenses, which include everything from what we paid the contractors for leaners and hangers and chipping and hauling and so forth, we spent $989,641. So that means after we look at our expenditures and take that away from what our FEMA reimbursement was, that left a net balance of FEMA receipts of $696,036. And in the issues and updates memo, we attached that spreadsheet that was that calculated those figures, and that is found on page 260. Which this is what was generated based on our FEMA receipts. What we requested based on our incurred costs and what we have gotten reimbursed, and the only outstanding reimbursement we're waiting on is that last $389,982 that's referenced in the paragraph, which leaves kind of a net, as the heading says, impact city budget of $696,035.96.
I have another question, too. I'm sorry to...
No, please,
there, there is a homeowners association. Is there a homeowners insurance?
Yes, but it didn't cover anything like that. Anything that was covered by insurance is not covered.
I should have said that.
But you, did you get anything for the for insurance with the...
Not for roads.
But there was some reimbursement with
to
the insurance.
Fences.
Okay.
And none of that's included in these numbers.
My understanding, after Stuart clarified that, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but did we make a profit of $696,000 on the FEMA reimbursement?
Well, I mean, profit meaning we...
net gain.
Net gain, yes, because we had, that is correct, in terms of cash outlay or money outlay, we had... some of this, remember, we got to depreciation on our equipment, we got to claim, and so forth in our indirect costs. FEMA reimbursed us at our indirect costs. So that's sort of a net over money that we spent. But again, that was using the FEMA guidelines that they present to us.
My experience in business is after I've paid my employees, after I've paid depreciation, after I've paid for the overhead and the G&A and the fringe and Lord knows what, if I have money left over, that's net gain, net profit. Now, you know, I don't begrudge the city getting extra money. It'll just relieve our budgeting, but it's also... it could be a little bit capricious to insist on, you know, pocketing the $690 and then not honor it. Now, if Calmia wants to come in, you know, let's listen to him. But I think Woodside acted rationally. Like I say, I was right in the middle of it. There was no way. I mean, I looked out my front door, and I was absolutely blocked in. I went back in for another hot coffee.
Remember that we had anticipated about a $500,000 benefit from the FEMA reimbursement, which we've already committed in our budget, our temporary budget configuration that we've got right now. So mm-hmm. It's not like there's just nearly $700,000 just sitting around from this. But also, really, it's probably unfair to call it profit also, because a lot of this is we were getting paid back for time for people, our labor, mm-hmm. which we had budgeted for anyway. So all we're doing is getting reimbursed for money that we would have otherwise spent. You follow me?
Yeah, I mean,
and so it's not a profit. It's just
the standard work time.
Right.
But we actually got reimbursed as if these individuals were working overtime and so forth. Well, whatever. I don't care what you call it. You know,
right.
Net gain to the city of $696,000. I think we ought to take a look at it seriously. Even if $500,000 of that was in our original budget,
And part of that, as you may notice in on page 260, that was spread out over two fiscal years.
Right.
And also, I think part of it, the reason why FEMA does reimburse, for example, to usage of equipment, which we did use, as I guess Ms. Hughes noted, for example, that the POA does not have equipment. We do. We were able to, that equipment got used a lot more than we probably anticipated. So, in theory, FEMA reimburses for that because you expect it to wear out faster. And obviously, we put aside depreciation money and for that. And if it wears out before it's fully depreciated,
I would expect us to use whatever schedule of depreciation to be the most beneficial to the city. And I assume, you know, that dovetails with what FEMA does, or
yes.
FEMA would calculate.
Yes, I'm sure their calculations are very rational in that regard.
Mr. Mayor, one clarification for Ms. Price. Eventually, after a struggle, FEMA did meet with the POA. The same representative was there that met with the county and the city and all the other people, at least in four counties. We had the information was all completed. We submitted it to him, and we told him how it was done. He was well aware there were no monitors, and Mr. Stewart didn't correct me. But I think there's four stages that you go to get the money, right? So at first you got to be approved as an application.
An eligible subgrantee, yes.
And we submitted that, and we were approved by FEMA based on the documentation that you see here tonight. And then the second phase is to get certification to be paid, or whatever words they use, and that's where it was turned down. And I find it rather odd that the people that turn it down would say you should have submitted it through the city. Okay, and our previous city managers were well aware of that before the fact. So I think that there's some area here to either get an estimate based on the pictures that we have, or somewhere in between $0 and $304,000 is probably the right number.
Is that in writing, Councilman Ebner, that FEMA stated that we should have submitted this through the city for approval?
It is not in writing, but she had witnesses hers. They told me that personally at the county meeting. I don't know that they would submit that in writing, but I can sure, you know, if we need to, we'll sure ask for an audit on this and audit the city's books, too.
Well, the city can't, if I understand what you're saying, for the city to have properly submitted it, the city would have had to have done the work. Were we reimbursed for the work that was done by our mutual aid partners?
Yes.
Yes. So, but
we had contracts.
Right.
Yes.
So we facilitated that work being done.
Through contracts.
And therefore, we were able to be reimbursed by FEMA. Or if we had done it ourselves, we could be reimbursed by FEMA. Where the problem arose that while we were willing to do it, apparently Tim agreed to do it, do the work, it got done preemptively, and, you know,
The city had several months to time to consider this being part of the application. However, it wasn't done.
But the city couldn't apply for it. The city didn't do work.
The work that Woodside did could have been included in the city's numbers in the application to FEMA.
Do we know anything more about that factually? I mean, other than
in terms of if we had picked up the debris, would it have been an eligible reimbursable cost?
They picked it up just the way they did, but we had submitted the bills on their behalf. Huh. As if that, isn't that what you're saying?
That's what she's saying.
Were they included?
Yeah,
in
right.
We sent it to FEMA as if we had done the work.
Well, I asked the emergency management division, and like Mr. Ebner just described, it was told verbally to me as well about submitting this application on behalf, I mean, after the fact. Could we do a second submission? And I was told that, you know, if it were submitted, it would not be approved since it was ineligible work. But, again, that's a verbal, you know, they don't reduce things in writing often.
Right. Well, I'm afraid there could be a misinterpretation when they say you should submit this through the city. Maybe their intent was that you should submit it to the city to get reimbursed by the city.
Yes.
And not
that's,
you should have to submit it, the city submit it for you.
Yes, I asked that as well, and that's, I think, sort of how I understood what they were telling me, is that the city could do the reimbursement. But again, had we submitted a reimbursement based on this work, as is shown in this agenda packet, it would not have been I was told verbally by Emergency Management Division that it was not eligible for reimbursement.
If we had done the work, Stuart, would it have been reimbursable?
I did not ask them that. You know, hypothetically, I was just dealing with the facts. But I can certainly ask.
If we were reimbursed for the mutual aid people, you'd have to assume that we'd be reimbursed.
Absolutely.
Than the other work. You'd have, I mean.
Absolutely.
It'd be hard.
I can place a telephone call to find out and try to get something in writing.
The answer to that question has to be yes, because the Greenville people got reimbursed.
Well, the thing there is the reason they were, and again, I'm speaking strictly with the Greenville work, because we had have existing solid waste accounts at those addresses. That's why that work was eligible. They did not, at least from my understanding, pick up any debris. And Ms. Hughes, correct me if I'm mistaken, the Greenville workers, were you familiar, did they pick any debris up from the rights of way along Woodside Plantation or Eastgate? I believe it was all the Greenville people did, because my understanding was it was just along the residential at the service addresses where the folks have trash and recycle accounts.
Probably mostly residential, but they did pick up some along Woodside Plantation.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, the question, you know, I do think it would have been reimbursable if the city picked it up. Maybe not. Stuart brings up a good point, because those aren't residentially, what'd you call them?
We don't have solid waste accounts.
Solid waste accounts. So maybe not. But if we assume for a second that it would have been reimbursed by FEMA, if we picked it up, again, it just comes down to what's the number? What's the difference between what we would have spent and what we would have been reimbursed? Because that was our cost for every other house, every other street in the city. And what's that number times the amount that was picked up? So to me, it's, I might be oversimplifying things, but to me, I'm past the point of whether or not there should be some reimbursement. I'm now to the point of how do we determine what that reimbursement is.
I can tell you this: the contractors that work for SCDOT, I can't even remember exact days, but it's like the first 7 days is all time and material. And then they go to the cubic yard, and there's a certain rate for a certain number of days because of the cut-ups and stuff they have to do. And all of that is documented for what the state contractors did. And so you can get those numbers for the first 7 days or 9 days, Dick. I can't remember.
I'm not talking about what SCOD contractors did. I'm talking about what the City of Aiken workers did, because that's the way we were going to do it. Because this is not eligible for SCDOT work. Is only eligible for City of Aiken to have cleaned it up. So I'm talking about what City of Aiken costs were, not SCDOT costs.
Well, if you need to have, you know, federally approved numbers, you can get them that way too. And we have approved numbers for
what actual numbers we had. What it actually cost us is all I'm talking about.
Oh, my question to Ms. Hughes again: are you all asking for the full amount?
Well, that would be very nice. But we are going to trust that the city will do the right and fair thing.
And that's what I think everybody in this room, I think, carries a certain amount of integrity. And I know that you want the right thing done. And the right thing done may be not to reimburse you. Who knows? But I don't. You don't want that. But certainly we will do our homework and do what is fair. Not only fair for Woodside, but fair for others that are calling us and asking us and saying to us, and you've opened, we don't use the term Pandora's box, but others are saying now that if you're going to reimburse Woodside, then take a look at me. I want reimbursement as well. And so as a council body, we've got to be prepared to entertain all these others that are coming to the table and to see if we have the funds to reimburse the others if we start with the reimbursement here. You know, interestingly enough, public, the public, human beings are interesting in that when this happened, it was a crisis for this town. And we would have done anything we could to get it all cleaned up and let's go away. And as time goes on, we forget how terrible it was.
Exactly.
And certainly we are looking at this now, but I think some memory loss has gone with how what a disaster we really had and how it imposed some limitation on all of us as we tried to get those limbs hauled away. And I went through some communities long after you mentioned the Masters, and I use that as an example, that debris was still lingering where snakes were seen in some of these. And, Gail, you've heard some of the story as well. So it had lingered quite a while in some of these areas. And
there's still a lot out there now.
Yeah. Okay. Can I make a comment? Something you said, Councilwoman Price, and that is other people would seek reimbursement. I got a lot of emails today, and most of them were negative, and I haven't answered any of them, and I'm not going to until this session is through. I'm not sure I accept that. There's only one other area that is on an equal footing with the Woodside Association, and that's Kalmia Landing. I mean, the rest of the people have to be talking about trees that were falling in their yard. Well, guess what? We all paid for that. City didn't do any of that stuff. I paid for tree work on my yard, and I think probably everybody in this room did. We're only talking about what the city would have done. I mean, it's a quasi-classification, quite frankly. Our school buses use those roads. Our police use those roads.
We don't have school buses. We don't have school buses.
The school buses from the county do travel all the roads.
But they're not our school buses.
They don't come
inside. We're getting technical.
We do pay school
buses. Let's put it this way. Police use them. School buses use them. Ambulances use them. Trash trucks use them.
Right.
So we can sit here and say, well, they're not our roads, so we have no responsibility. Well, these folks pay a lot of our tax money. They put a lot of our budget. A major part of our budget, quite frankly, if you want to compare neighborhoods, they're probably number one.
I'm sure.
And nobody's going to argue that. So we need to consider that when we talk about being fair.
But if you put Woodside and Kalmia, you know, last priority. Now, Woodside is a little bit different construction. If you get out there, it's easy to get lost. But there's not so many roads where you can, you know, it's not laid out like Aiken. It's not square. If you can't go up the street, you go over and you still get there.
Not
Woodside
lots.
Is not like that.
Right.
So, you know, the senior population, what if somebody had a heart attack and the city said, no, we're not going to clear that tree out of the road and the ambulance can't get there? You know, I think it's that predicate, whoever said that Woodside has the last priority. And I mean, trash pickup or, debris pickup is one thing, but clearing the roads, I think, is top priority.
I've never heard that Woodside was the last priority.
Somebody did.
No.
Didn't somebody just say that?
No.
They were talking about priorities.
But we did have some of our PRT staff did go in and get the roads cleared. I want to say they were cleared enough to where one lane, my understanding from talking to the PRT supervisor, is it was cleared enough that one lane that Friday, which I believe was the 14th, was clear, so at least one vehicle could go through Woodside Plantation and Eastgate. And then once that was sufficient for an ambulance or a fire truck to go through, they then went on to I believe Jim Lakes to do the same on the roads in Jim Lakes. So there was some work done. Now, granted, as Ms. Hughes said, they brought in the POA brought Cold Creek in first, and then Weiss to assist with the finishing the work and getting it off
Cold Creek
right
just
of way.
Put the debris on the sides of the road. Weiss got it out. But I think what Mr. Homucky is referring to is, I said we were told that the other road category, which Woodside Plantation Drive and Eastgate Drive fell into, was the third priority because it wasn't. Neither of those are residential streets.
Because of the lack of the debris accounts that you're talking about, the solid waste accounts, was probably why that would be another road.
That could be in my discussions with Mr. Coakley or with Tim Coakley. I know that specific item was never said.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Why don't we hear from Alan here, and then we need to talk about a path forward.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I am Alan Moses. I'm on the board of directors of Cavendale Landing Homeowners Association, Condominium Associates, and the treasurer. We spent $18,897. That's $18,897, which is easily audible, for just the clearing of the road. Remember, Calmia Landing, Landing Drive, is a circle with some cul-de-sacs. One entrance, which is also the only exit. We have residents who are at least 55 years old, going up to well into their 90s. The trauma that those elderly folks were having caused the association to do as much as we could ourselves. We were out that day, that night, dragging where we could. Those of us, I mean, I'm mid-70s now, you know, dragging those limbs in that slippery ice while it's still coming down. The branch is still falling on the road. Then we called in for help. We were very careful of who we called in. We used our own landscaping contractor, told him to suspend the normal landscaping he would have been doing for almost 2 months. We then brought in tree service that we had previously contracted with and we knew was the best price. So we did our due diligence. And if you talk about emergency, there was our folks, I will say, our more possibly in jeopardy than Woodside. If Woodside gets reimbursed, we submit a request for $18,897, which is only a small token of what we've spent and are continuing to spend even today. Any questions, gentlemen, ladies?
Alan, you're in the discussions I had with FEMA, even at the meeting we had with the Woodside POA, I brought up Calmia Landing as the second one in the city that did have some expenditures. I didn't know what they were, but I knew you had some, talking to Mr. Johnson over here and some others that live out there. I think, Mr. Mayor, it seemed like we have somewhat of an agreement that there ought to be some kind of reimbursement. It seemed like that Mr. Biedenbaugh should be able to get some costs together. There are FEMA rates for different time frames during the storm and after the storm. I don't have them, but I saw them and reviewed them with Metric, who was the contractor for the state overseeing Coxwall to do the work. And trust me, they know how to finagle the numbers. So I think you can get the numbers from the city if you can figure out what it cost you the first whatever days and after that. And then it obviously gets down cheaper when you just got a truck driver and one man going around. So I think there's probably something between zero and the numbers that from Cow Mill Landing and the numbers from Woodside. Mm-hmm. And then we could have it. Hopefully you can get those numbers for the agenda next time and we can go over it again. Okay. I would be glad to, if you need help from me or if you need me to request an audit on any of this from FEMA, I talked to Mr. Dexter, who is a SCEMD person involved in this, about it. There already is some scrutiny going on within Aiken County and the city of Aiken from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I did ask him specifically, and this was at the municipal meeting because he gave a presentation there that I went to. I specifically asked him some questions in relation to what we're discussing tonight. So I think there's ways that we can get to an agreeable solution to this.
Yeah.
And those numbers are available, what the state contractors use.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Mr. Moses.
I agree with you. Just a minute, please. I totally agree with that.
I think this
discussion's been very good. I think I've learned some things, and perhaps others have too. We certainly want to be fair.
If I can make a recommendation,
yes,
sir, that after this discussion is done and over with and a final decision is made, then the council, in conjunction with the county, sit down and do a good playback and say, okay, no finger pointing, but how could we do this better? Because there's going to be another something, God knows when, and we need to be better prepared so the residents, the associations, and the various public entities know what to do and who's to lead and who's to answer questions. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
I have a quick question to ask. I spoke with your association president, and you all did not submit a request to FEMA, did you?
No, ma'am.
Okay,
no,
that's what I thought he told. You did?
I mailed it to them.
And did they reject it?
They received it.
That's all.
That's all.
Okay.
No, okay.
But they rejected you. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council.
Thank you.
I think this might be amenable.
Thank you all very much
for your consideration.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes. It'll be back on the agenda. Thank you. I was just going to suggest that we're doing so well with this small group meeting of council as opposed to, all seven of us trying to agree on something which is just not going to happen, I don't think, as easy as it could. But
right. Maybe
you could appoint two other council members, meet with the appropriate representatives from Woodside and Kalamea Landing, and kind of facilitate and get the input from Stuart.
I am.
Okay. Now, are you, just so I understand from a path forward, do we want to do this and have the small group meeting and then have something available and ready for the September 22nd agenda?
Yeah, if possible. I'm going to say if possible, because
okay. They
may have to go in the archives starting on February 11th or 12th is when the teams moved into town. But they, I don't know where they keep those records, but I've seen the records.
And again, when you say they, you mean Emergency Management Division and FEMA?
They were working under SCDOT directly.
Oh, you're speaking of Metric and Coxwell.
Coxwell
okay. Worked
for the state.
Yes.
Metric was the supervisor
mm-hmm. For
whatever you call them. They counted the sticks.
They were the monitors. Yes.
And all of those, they showed us copies of the daily logs, and it's all public information.
And we had daily logs as well.
And you probably used the same log, but they had numbers for, you did this for so many days, you got paid more in the beginning, and you got paid less at the end.
But in any event, there are a myriad of appeals processes, and we should use every one of them. Don't ever accept a decision by the government on the first shot. You can appeal to the state, and I think they told us at one of the FEMA kickoff meetings that we could even appeal to Washington.
God forbid if we do.
Hey, we got a delegation. Help the Savannah River.
Don't think we'll get that all done by the next meeting.
No. It may take longer. That's why I was saying if you can get it ready, but we need to be right on it. And I agree with Ms. Price. We need the right numbers and Mr. Mary's agreement. We move to the next one.
Hang on. One last comment. I think I agree with Mr. Moses. With my background in the military, it seems like we're lacking a good emergency response, designating who's responsible for what, who the decision makers are, who to contact, telephone calls, points of contact. You're familiar with what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. And I think maybe Roger LaDuke should appoint another committee.
Let me just clarify. We have an emergency plan.
Yeah, I know.
It wasn't activated.
Yeah, it wasn't activated.
Maybe we need to have a workshop over there,
right,
and everybody on council get a copy of it, as we did, several years ago?
And that should be an annual thing with council, so we're not caught with our pants down, so to speak, when an emergency hits. It's a well-done plan. If it needs to be updated, we should update it, but I would suggest, Mr. Mayor, that we
out of our experience with the ice storm, I think we can update it.
And public safety, I know, is working on updating the plan. Once they get past the accreditation later this year, that'll be one of their primary factors and focus.
Yep.
And plus, the county will begin updating the county's emergency management plan as well. That comes up for renewal in 2016, and they will begin for early in 2015 on that process.
And I might add that the county has the state-of-the-art facility for emergency drill.
Yes, they do now.
It's very nice.
Okay, we'll move forward on this as we've discussed.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
As quickly as we can and get the right numbers, correct numbers. And
thank everybody
thank
for coming
you all.
Tonight.
And bring it back and let everyone know when it's going to be on the agenda again. Thank you all. Item 4 is a request for approval to proceed with improvements to the municipal building using the CPST 3 funds. Mr. Biedenbach.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the committees met on August the 6th, and after that meeting, we were authorized to begin preparations to move employees from public safety and the city manager's office and the city solicitor from the what we call the PACT office at 139 Newberry Street Southwest into the first floor of the municipal building. And in addition, council requested we make other improvements to the conference center and the exterior of the building. And we also discussed relocating the mayor's office from the second floor of the municipal building to the corner office of the old city manager's suite. And we have a breakdown of proposed improvements and estimated costs that will be paid for with capital project sales tax 3 funds designated for municipal building. The municipal building, there's cash on hand from CPST of about $365,000. We estimate that this work will cost up to $86,000 and again, our primary focus here is to get the old finance suite and the city manager suites updated or upgraded, I should say, and are ready to receive those folks that will be moved out of the PACT office. We did line item out some of the work for council's review. We would then proceed to get bids on some of these individual jobs and proceed with the work should council approve these improvements.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we... this is an appropriation, if I'm not mistaken. I move that we appropriate money as outlined here, with the exception that I would like to have the mayor's office location discussed again at the subcommittee meeting that will be talked about during the ANF meeting. So everything on here would, I'd say, everything. The motion is to approve everything on the list except the actual relocation of the mayor's office.
Okay. Do we have a second to this?
I'll second.
Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Mayor. The CPST 3, where did you say we were pulling the money from for this?
There. Well, actually, we have paid up. Our finance director, Ms. Kim Abney, has reviewed and we have paid off, as you know, we've made council approve several loans and we are up to date and we have a positive cash on hand balance of a little over $365,000 that money would come from. When we get receipts in December or our next quarterly payment, we will then proceed as council requested or passed by an ordinance at the first of this year to pay back the equipment replacement fund. In our water and sewer account.
Ms. Price, Stuart and I had a conversation earlier today. In the future, he is actually going to put the cost code and which item. Because here, there's so many of them it could fit in, and
right.
2 years from now, we aren't going to remember what we said tonight.
Very
good point.
And for this, what I will do in this instance is put in the next issues and updates memo, the designated budget code with the descriptor of what exactly that line item pertains to.
Okay.
And obviously the restrooms at Perry Park,
right.
We would do that. The Urban Land Institute, and I believe there might have been one other that escapes me right now. But I will notate that in the next issues and updates memo, and subsequent cover memoranda would requesting capital projects, sales tax fund expenditures would list the budget code and
okay.
name.
It's very
Thank
good.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we all set? No other comments?
No.
Yeah. Steve. Are you thinking about keeping the mayor's office in this building or changing it over to the...
I'd like it to be a discussion at the next subcommittee meeting on the A&F bill.
Okay.
Oh, that's why I took it out of here.
No, I agree. But
it's at the subcommittee meeting.
Yeah, I think we ought to discuss it, certainly. No problem there.
Call a question.
Okay. All right. All in favor? That's... Okay, passes unanimously. Item 5, request to review city's bicycle lane striping program. Mr. Beedenbow.
Mayor, thank you. Council member DeWar, when he was visiting family in Arizona, contacted me and about putting this item on the agenda.
Haven't stopped working.
You're glad, baby.
I had to put a baby down to handle this.
I can see it.
Anyway, he was very, very, very good points here. Have money in our capital project sales tax 2 program to stripe or create bicycle lanes in our town, in our city. And in November 2012, council approved the arts subcommittee's Aiken County Urbanized Area Bicycle and Pedestrian Plan, and I won't even try to say verbalize that acronym, but we began by striping Hayne Avenue, and we did that back in May. We striped Hayne Avenue heading west from downtown towards Richland Avenue. And then approximately two or 3 weeks ago, we striped it back from Richland back east towards downtown on the southern side of Hayne Avenue. Councilmember DeWar was contacted by some citizens who correctly pointed out that the state code, South Carolina Code of Laws, section cite in the memo does not allow motor vehicles to block bicycle lanes, basically meaning you cannot park where there are bicycle lanes. So, and we do have vehicle owners that park along their bicycle lanes, either residents or visitors to those residences on Hayne. Since Tom Lex, the chairman of the Aiken County Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, we contacted him since he worked with our staff to develop a solution to this striping issue, to develop to work on some solutions. And Mr. Lex is bicycling out west, so he's unavailable to be here. But Mr. Jelquist, oh, Tom, you are back. Oh, you made it. You biked back. Okay. So anyway, thank you. But anyway, we've got, and our engineering utilities director, George Grinton, also went out to Hayne Avenue and proposed a potential solution for council's consideration. And I guess Mr. Lex as well could do this. But obviously, we do not want our public safety and highway patrol to avoid or not enforce the law where applicable. But this is an issue of concern to residents who have parked along Hayne Avenue and their guests. So this is an issue for council discussion and moving forward.
And let me make a few comments. I've spoken to our public safety director, and who confirmed what the law said. Essentially, what we have done, and it's a result of an unintended consequence. Everybody wants to support bike lanes. I mean, everybody is behind that. It's a good thing. We just saw this weekend a four-segment bicycle race that was well participated in. But the unintended consequence is that we have made Hayne have a no parking street. And in that particular case, it poses some undue hardships. There are some people that just have no other place to park but on the street. We got a funeral home there that every so often gets their parking lot gets full, and people have to park on it. So I think there are some solutions. But one thing clearly that did not happen, that probably should have happened, that might have been able to deter this, is that when we're going to do something that's going to affect a street and the residents' use of that street, we need to let them know ahead of time. Because obviously there are some people that would have told us, that's not a smart thing to do because, and we would have prevented this. The other thing that I find striking is, in the agenda we got the top 10 priorities for striping. Hayne Ave isn't even on the list.
It's number 5, isn't it?
Park Ave, Hayne to Union. No, that's Park Ave. I mean, I didn't read that as Hayne Ave.
No, this is if you read the first sentence in there, though, it mentions that that the striping of Hayne Avenue will be completed, and then those are the following.
Yeah, but shared lane markings, which is not what we have, I don't think, is it?
Yeah, that's what we have.
We have both. Newest stuff is the shared lane. The
to a point.
Is the bike. And that is a potential, with the chevrons, the two chevrons and the bike, we've got that from where it begins near the intersection with Richland back to about Dibble, and then the bike lane begins.
Well, I received complaints also, like Mr. Duar did, and what I heard was just residents that just objected, said they thought it was aesthetically unsatisfactory, let's call it that. They used the word ugly, but is there a way to do this, to designate these things with either smaller graphics or in some way that might be a little bit less obtrusive? Because the complaints I got were all about the aesthetics of it more than about the parking. The parking's obviously a valid...
Well, a lot of people don't know about the parking. That's and we don't want them to find out the hard way. Here comes the expert.
Well, it looks good anyway. They did a good job. And I see you put Hampton Avenue on the high priority list. They certainly need it because majority of the people that ride on Hampton Avenue is riding because that's their only mode of transportation, and they definitely need to do some work on those to make it safer for those people who are riding because that's their mode of transportation.
My name is Tom Lex, resident of Aiken, and I'm also the chairman of the County Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Let me address two things. First of all, the priority list that is attached to the agenda, that was developed in going through the bicycle pedestrian plan and selecting clearly there are a lot more areas that we could address, but we tried to select the top 10 priorities on the assumption that Hayne Avenue was already going to be addressed. So what we did is we said Hayne is going to get completed, but then in addition to that, here are the following additional 10 priorities. So Hayne was always number one.
Okay.
And the objective of coming up with these priorities was to establish the foundation for us to become, to start becoming bicycle friendly and start addressing some of the higher priority areas for people who want to get out and use their bicycles, people who only have bicycles as a mode of transportation, and connect them into areas of the city that are relatively low traffic density, and therefore we don't need to spend any money to do anything in those areas. Like most of our parkways downtown, Colleton, Marion, things, you know, those are low enough traffic density that if people can get there, they'll be able to ride them. So once we had established some of these interconnecting routes, put up bicycle route identification signs so people know the routes that they can most safely ride to get into town or into some of the other areas of the city. The point on aesthetics, I will say that the markings that go on the road, whether it's a bike lane, whether it's a shared lane marking, there's pretty much accepted national standards for how those symbols, the size of those symbols, the frequency that those symbols get put on the road, even the width of bike lanes. Now, there are some exceptions. If you're in some congested areas and you don't have the footprint of the roadway, there's some latitude in reducing from a 5-foot bike lane down to about a 3-foot bike lane. Clearly 5-foot is better, but where you have constraints because of the width of the street, you can go narrower. In the case of Hayne Avenue, I went with Councilman Duarte contacted me, and I was traveling out west, went through 17 states, rode my bike in 17 states, hit some of the top bicycle-friendly cities in the country, and I can tell you that they have found ways to deal with the parking issues. If a road is not wide enough to have two bike lanes, one in each direction, some of them will have one bike lane going one direction, coming back the other way. They'll put a share the lane marking on that path and then have parking only on that side. Other cities have chosen to alternate one-way streets so that they could have a one-way street and therefore use that extra space to put bike lanes in and allow parking. In the case of Hayne Avenue, if it's not wide enough to have parking and facility for bicycles such as a bike lane, it could be very easily done to just put share the lane markings on both lanes. You put those symbols, which is the bicycle with the chevrons going east and going west, right in the middle of the lane, so motor vehicle operators recognize that A, bicycles may be on the road, and B, bicycles are allowed to be on the road. That would be an acceptable approach.
Middle of the lane.
I'm sorry?
You said in the middle of the lane?
Middle of each lane. You'd have the middle of the lane going towards Richmond and the middle lane coming back into town. That would eliminate the issue of not allowing parking on that street. All that does, it tells motor vehicle operators that bicycles are allowed to be on that road and bicycles will be on the road, so drive with care. And that's the way a lot of cities have done it.
Well, I think if we did that, it would be more acceptable, obviously. But I never thought of the parking issue when I voted to support the plan. So it's a lesson learned. We need to apply that issue on a case by case basis. And certainly, if we're going to put a bike lane that's going to result in no parking on it, the residents need to be notified, at least be given a chance to discuss it. Some streets it's okay. And, obviously, I think it's a problem on Hayne.
The way I think it's marked on Hayne, correct me, Tom, if I'm wrong, is that the eastbound side going back into town is just to share the road markings. There's not an actual designated lane, or am I wrong?
I've just got back in the town.
Once you get to Dibble, it becomes a bike lane from Richland. It's the chevrons and
right.
Share the
road. Because it was right, even in the plan that had the bike lanes, we knew that it was going to narrow down to finish the route to Richland, and there was no way you're going to put bike lanes, so it was just going to be share the lane markings.
I'll ask you another question. This one's, I've ridden many hundreds of miles on roads all over Aiken. And I've always been under the assumption that that every road was a shared road, that bicyclists had the right to every road. Is that clearly not true?
I would like to agree with you that that's a fact. Every road is a shared road. However, not everyone is educated on that point. And so the whole idea of designating and putting that identification on the road, it's to help promote that culture that there needs to be mutual respect between motorists and cyclists, and it goes both ways. Motorists have to accept and give respect to the fact that a cyclist can and will be on the road, but cyclists also have to understand that they're sharing that lane or that road with motor vehicle operators. So it's a two-way street. And a lot of times, you'd be surprised, I rode over 14,000 miles last year on my bike, and a lot of that was here in Aiken County. And you'd be surprised the number of times that I had people throw things at me, people tell me to get off the road, I didn't belong on the road, and to tell me to get on the sidewalk. It's against the law to be on the sidewalk, but they were telling me to be on the sidewalk. So we need to build a culture here in Aiken County that bicycles can be on the road, out on the road. It's a state law that they can be on the road. And just to make everyone aware of that, and by putting those markings on the road, it just reinforces that.
But there's no smaller version or...
No, it's a standard it's a national standard. And if you have it smaller, then people are going to say, I didn't see it. I can't see it. I couldn't see it. And it's been pretty well accepted that's the thing that gets everyone's attention.
Quick question. To me, probably the most dangerous bike-car interaction is unlit bicycles after dark.
Absolutely.
It's out in the county, but I was coming home on Silver Bluff one time, and I swear... You know, about a mile or two past the village. I mean, basically, there's not very much room.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you just see a bike, zero. I mean,
right.
The person's got dark clothes on and everything else.
Well, clearly, the issue with you know, we're talking now how we mark our roads and designate where bicycles are making motor vehicle operators aware of where bicycles are going to be. Another part of the bicycle pedestrian plan is education, and that's educating motor vehicle operators and cyclists how to ride safely. A very significant element of that is making sure people understand when they ride at night, they have to wear reflective clothing, they have to have a white headlight and a rear reflector or a red light so that they can be seen. And there's, unfortunately, a lot of people that are not educated on that. They don't think about it. They don't have the common sense, whatever, and they go out and ride at night without those features, and now motor vehicle operators can't see them. So part of our education program is to get that out.
Tom, is there I'm trying to rack my brain about alternative ideas. Is there such thing as like an upright sign, a share the road sign, or anything like that?
There is, and you will see some of those here in Aiken County. In fact, Aiken County was one of the first counties in the state to get those signs up on various roads. And those are good. However, they generally are spaced at the beginning and end of a road, and there are a lot of users that come in between, and they don't see those signs. The other thing is when they're up on a sign along the side of the road, people tend to not even see them. They don't look at them. They look through them. When you have a marking on the road, they can't miss them. It's right in front of them. It's in the lane that they're traveling. So it's a lot more obvious.
So, Tom, would you be willing to change whatever you need to change in the bike plan to permit the SLM designation on Hayne Avenue so parking residents can park in front of their houses?
Absolutely. There's not in the bike pedestrian plan, there are recommendations in there. They are not absolutes. And clearly, if the intent of putting these priorities together was not to commit to spending a lot of capital dollars, it was trying to get the low-hanging fruit. And if we're talking about having to widen streets in order to become bicycle friendly, we know that's not going to happen. So the objective is to get us started as quickly as we can, and that would mean if Hayne isn't wide enough to have both, then go with share the lane markings.
Okay, and all that's involved to do that at this point is to paint that symbol every so often. I'm sure there's a predetermined distance.
Right.
So we can do that then?
Well, it's already done.
It's done on part of the road.
Yeah.
It's done on part of it, but not all of it, is my understanding.
I'm sorry?
I say it's done on, single lane markings are done on part of Hayne, but not all of Hayne.
It was done there because that was definitely too narrow to put bike lanes in and still have wide enough travel lanes. The reason bike lanes were recommended for Hayne, the other part of Hayne, is because the number of times, as we observed it, that people were parked there, I mean, generally there aren't cars parked in that street. And that's a lot wider portion. There was the bike lane and wide travel lanes were going to fit, so that was low-hanging fruit as getting bike lanes.
Well, there may not be cars parked there, but certainly people that visit, people that go there, and some of the residents certainly have to park, and maybe some of the residents that are here that want to address it, but some of the residents have to park in front of their houses.
The Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee does not address the parking issue. All we're trying to do is address how do we make it safe and user-friendly for cyclists on our roads. And if we can't put the bike lane in, the next alternative is to share the lane markings.
So the lesson learned is if we're going to put a bike lane in, we need to notify the residents. We need to evaluate the impact on parking.
Yes.
And for Hayne Avenue, we need to make it a single lane SLM all the way through.
Yeah. Now, who's responsible for doing this? Anybody know?
You're talking about striping the lane?
Yes.
We have capital project sales tax 2 money approximately, or we've got adequate money to stripe and unstripe.
Well, who's the person on our staff?
George, our engineering and utilities director, George Grant, and he has worked with Tom on the plan.
Will we do state rules?
We had to get an encroachment permit from the Department of Transportation before we could do any of this work.
Okay. What do you have to do now to get it corrected to the right way?
Well, we could.
On Hayne.
Yes, to correct it on Hayne based on the recommendation to make a single lane SLM darken or it was striped, I believe, with thermoplast, George. I mean, it would have to be covered or removed. And from the technical aspect, George could probably speak on that.
Yeah. I'm just asking who is responsible for that. That's one place. But how about all the others that we will look at? And there'll be different ways of doing certain roads, and obviously.
It's the first thing that, listening to the discussion would be to have an approved plan. And so I guess I would look for council to, maybe give us some guidance on how to approve the plan. We have been working with the Bicycle Committee, and we were, like Mr. Duar, we didn't really take into account the parking issue.
Yeah.
There are some other options along some of the narrow parts when the city beautified the Hayne many years ago. Parking spots were put in off of driveways because there was no parking at the narrowest parts. Those are the parts where chevrons were put in. There's sufficient width between the curb and the sidewalk, so an option would be at driveways to put in a curb maybe to the left and to the right to provide some off the street parking, and there you have an example where you could spend a little extra money and provide parking for the residents and have, the designated lane for the bicycles. If that is not, what's desired, then we would have to, paint over, blacken the stripes, and then put chevrons, in its place.
Well, I'd like to hear, I think there's some residents of Hayne Avenue here that want to speak. I'd like to hear from some of the local people, if we can, Mayor.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Charlotte Weedman, Hayne Avenue. I am not a bike expert.
But this afternoon, in just a short time in Googling bike lane width, I came upon a wealth of information, and I grabbed a measuring tape. Many states, their DOT recommendations and laws for bicycle lanes and bicycle plans put a 4-foot minimum of a bike lane for that, and that is a bike lane. And definition of a bike lane is for the preferential or exclusive use of bicycles. So one section of Hain where it is white striped, it's a bike lane, so no cars there. But DOT says a 4-foot minimum measured from the gutter lip. With a 1.5 gutter allows a 5.5-foot clearance. Hain Avenue is 45 inches in the bike lane and with a 9-inch gutter. So that's 54 inches, which is well below safe bicycle lane width and law in most states. Rails to Trails on their website, which I would strongly recommend anyone who is on this committee review the document on their planning, design, and operation of bicycle facilities. It's a 230-page document that outlines how all bicycle plans and trails should be laid out, including what's important. Is it a use trail or is it a scenic drive trail? What's the traffic like? What's the turnover of parking? What are the speeds like? And how are these things interconnecting? And this is put out by the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. And again, they put in there a minimum of 5.5, and in every one of these, DOT, Rails to Trail, the highway travel safety people, when they say it's a designated bike lane with a street that has on-street parking, as Hain does, you have a 1-foot gutter, a 7-foot parking space, a 5-foot bike lane, and then the traffic lane. Now, for those of us who live on Hain, we frequently see people taking Hain as a 2-lane road in one direction, and they will pass on the right, so there's a lot of room there, but at the same time, too, it's also very dangerous putting that out there. Furthermore on that, one of the big issues with bike lanes adjacent to driveways is there's no buffer zone, so as people pull out of their driveway, they don't necessarily stop before the sidewalk or before the street. They'll go out a little bit to see what their clearance is for pulling out, and it's a good chance to hit a bicyclist. Before I came tonight, I did a quick tally on Hain Avenue of the homes that are in bike lane area, not the shared lanes where it's just the chevrons, and close to 70% of them were impacted by losing parking. And that doesn't take it, and that was only residents, and it didn't take into people like me who have the ability to park on a side street, which for my guest, and honestly, Mr. Lex, you might not be there when we're having people over, but we're a pretty social group, and a week doesn't go by when we don't have people visiting. So one other thing, too, that I heard tonight about public safety having to enforce, you know, if cars are parked in a designated bike lane, public safety has to take care of it. Well, I've also asked public safety about the lack of regard for the speed limit of 35 miles an hour on Hain, and they say we are fully aware of it, we would love to address it, but we have no good place to hide out to clock them. So they see us and they immediately slow down. So if even on the few times when they're pulled over on the side of Hain, they would be impinging on the bike lane, further, you know, making Hain more difficult to police in the speeds, which I'd love to see someone go 35 miles an hour and not be texting.
Thank you very much.
That's a good one.
Mr. Mayor, we have in the audience someone, I don't know whether he wants to speak or not, that is an urban planner. Nick, you care to make any comment? Yes. Yes.
Well, you covered all pretty well thoroughly.
Okay.
I'm from Illinois, which has the original rail.
You have to come up.
Would you please come up to the mic so we can... Okay.
Sharon.
Sure.
Sharon Brown, 718 Hayne Avenue. Well, most of you know me, and most of you know how crazy about this city I am. I'm one of the people who drives down the street going, I love you, Aiken, I love you. And I live in a house on Hayne Avenue right in that long bike lane. No one contacted me. I give a lot of meetings at my house. Most of you know I'm involved in just about everything that goes on in this town. And I love doing it. I probably have a meeting at my house certainly twice a month of some sort. And they have to park on Hayne Avenue. There is nowhere else to park. My back of my yard butts Chaffee, and that is a very narrow lane. Nowhere could there be parking back there. As it is, the folks who have their cars back there are really in danger of somebody hitting them as they come down that street. So my people can't park in the back, and I'm between two houses. Now, I don't know where you expect all these little old ladies that are working hard for this city to park. But they really need parking spaces. And I was horrified when I saw this. Because, first of all, I had no idea why they would go right in front of our house without ever contacting any of us. And I didn't think that was really very fair. Now, I really do my very best, and all those of you who know me know I do, to try to be fair to everyone in this city. And I would really like the same thing done for me. Thank you.
Sharon, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. How do you get your mail delivered?
How do I get my by the postman who comes up there and he parks illegally right in front of my house on that.
Thank you, Sharon.
Should I ask a question?
Thank you.
What do we need to do?
We need a pass forward here for this thing.
Oh, Jane.
I'm a council person.
We can't leave you out.
I know you want to fast forward, and I know this was not meant to happen. I do know that. But I'm Jane Vodders. I live at 707 Hay. We had a bike path, by the way, suggested about 7 years ago on the south side. And we contacted the neighbors about it, and that's when we got the details that it was going to take 6 feet of their front yard, and they didn't want that. So we didn't do it. And so I'm kind of worried that now it's gone to Arts, and that's all done somewhere else, and then it comes back here because, I don't know, I just can't. The thing about it is, and I'll try to be brief, Aiken is so special, as we all know, because our downtown is surrounded by neighborhoods that are viable. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to go through a wasteland to get to our downtown. We are so fortunate in that respect. And we have downtown businesses, and we are so fortunate in that respect. And one of the reasons, in our neighborhood, we have had about every 7 years or 8 years, people forget that anybody lives in our neighborhood. And all of a sudden, things just start happening. And somebody finds an inexpensive piece of property and thinks, oh, gee, let's change the zoning. And, you know, and what our neighborhood has said over the years in a very positive way is, look, we're not asking for money. We're not asking for any big project. We're just asking, we have to live with the zoning that's there. We'd like you to keep it. When streets are changed, we'd like to know. Because that makes every neighborhood, not just downtown, every neighborhood willing to participate with this city and support the projects of this city. And no neighborhood would stand for having somebody go down the sides of their streets and paint white stripes and tell them that now you can no longer park in front of your home.
Right.
I mean, that's a detriment to our property values, anybody's property values.
Absolutely.
So I really think the scariest thing to me about this is that nobody, none of us, not one, were notified. And then to find out it costs $23,000 to stripe that street, I was so naive. I thought you used paint. I didn't know that. And I'm sure you did too, because I'm sure when you saw this plan that said they're going to be 52 miles of these bypass, you never thought of $670,000. Did you? I mean, is that part of that? Is there that much money, Stuart, in that
we do not
project?
Know about well, it's less than 200,000 now, but it's high hundred.
So, I mean, if it, it, I read on the internet too, and that was rough because I'm not very good at that, but it said that an average cost is about $12,000 a mile of striping. Because it's this polyethylene, whatever, I don't know, whatever it is.
Thermoplastic.
So, thermoplastic, whatever. But, and I wonder how that can be taken up, by the way. I mean, I'm, you know, we've already been through the street being narrowed, and unfortunately, if we had planned all this ahead of time with the street wider, we wouldn't have had to narrow it. We could have had parking lanes and bike lanes and all that stuff. But we didn't. So now we're with where we are. By the way, Denise Hyman is my neighbor in the back row, and Denise was where when they built the new sidewalks in 2005. She pointed out to me that when that happened, we were asked about bike lanes, and didn't we want those? Because the neighbors were involved with the sidewalks. And we all said, no, we didn't. And there were already bikers on the street. And frankly, if you look at Hayne, and look at any street in the old part of the city that's been paved a lot, there's not a nice, smooth, level edge to drive on. It goes down. Right. It's the bikers that we have that you're they normally don't drive in the bike lanes. And I understand why, because I'm not sure I could do it either. And so I think there's just so much here that could have been solved and would be solved for every neighborhood if you just put it, let them know. And come to look at this, by the way, at this list, we're talking about bike lanes on Chesterfield Street from Richland Avenue to Whiskey, to down to where the beginning of Whiskey Road is. Well, now, bike lanes means no parking along those lanes. Those shops and offices and banks, and the Casa Bella restaurant, they depend on that parking. I mean, they're already crowded all the time. And I know, Ms. Diggs, you mentioned up on Hampton. I drove that today, too. Mm-hmm. There are some places where the houses are going to want their parking still to be there. So it needs to be a sensitive thing for the bikers and the owners, I think. And, I mean, I'm just... And Park Avenue, from Union to Highland Park Avenue, there's supposed to be a parking reduction. Businesses downtown need those parking spaces. I mean, I don't... The bikers have the right to be on the road. Anyway, I just think the taxpayers who care about this town, and Lord, there are enough of us, thank goodness, we all need to know when things like this are going to happen. Big time.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
I think Mr. Lex had one more. He raised his hand. I don't know if you want to hear from
I'm sorry. Yes, Tom.
Just to address your point.
You have to come forward. Tom.
Tom, you got to come up here.
Please.
The recommendations and the priorities were not intended to take away parking. It is designated that as space permits. The advisory committee, we aren't an engineering organization. It's really, we really have to default to engineering to look at the space available. And that's what we said, as space permits, bike lanes or share the lane markings. Share the lane markings do not take away parking. So in a street that's too narrow to allow parking and bike lanes, then clearly we default to saying use the share the lane markings. That's the simplest, low-cost approach. Don't have to widen the street. Don't have to take away parking.
You can put those in the middle of the street.
You put them in the middle of the lane. That's right.
So you don't put them right in front of the house.
No, they go down the middle of the lane. You can still park on that street. Drivers can still drive in the street, but then also cyclists can be on the street and alerts drivers that cyclists will be on the road and they need to be looking out for them. So.
Thank you for coming, Tom. I think we've had a healthy discussion, and I think we have a path forward to make sure we... Oops.
Yes.
I'm listening to all the conversation about the lines that just put on.
Thank you.
You have to. There's a tape recorder picking you up.
Tink Callahan. I'm Sharon and Charlotte and Jane and Denise's neighbor. And I agree with your statement, Mr. Mary. You said it was always assumed that the roads are shared roads. I'm a horse person. We all assume this is a horse-friendly town. the roads are shared. Occasionally you see a horse on the street. We don't need signs. We know that we're a horse-friendly town. Why can't we be a bicycle-friendly town without signage? Or maybe we have a sign on the edge of town that says we're a bicycle-friendly town. Everybody has to abide by bicycles and rules. Why do we have to put more money into more stuff on the road when it's something that should be assumed? You're a bicycle person? I've always been a bicycle person. I knew I had a right on the road just like when I'm riding my horse. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Why do we have to have signs all over and spend money? Just a simple question. So I don't want the board to get the impression that as soon as we take away these lines, we have to put something else down. Why?
Good point.
Okay? Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we're going to have to get together and make sure we do these things properly, and if we're going to do it at all, if we're going to put them out at all. It's a good point made, many good points made. Okay.
So just for the, so we understand as staff, for the record, going forward regarding the bicycle lanes at Hayne Avenue, I know it was mentioned, I think, Councilmember DeWard, to have the single lane SLM in the middle of the street was, I guess, the recommendation. I don't know if it was ever decided by council.
It's not a recommendation. My concern affected the parking. So if this, the solution could be, on one hand, not have any bike lanes there because they are allowed there anywhere, anyway, or the solution could be single lane marking. So I
shared lane marking.
Shared lane.
And I do think that we should seriously consider what was just said by these ladies, all of them, about whether or not we need to put anything at all. Oh, Tom doesn't like that at all. I know that. But if we're spending this kind of money, we've really got to think whether we need to do it. I think it's serious. Seriously. Are we saying 12, is it 1,200 or 12,000 a mile?
12,000. It costs
$12,000 a mile?
Yes.
Well, I think there's some very good information that's come out of this discussion, no doubt. And I know Sharon needs, and all you other ladies, she needs a place to park. Right. Have you gotten any tickets yet, Sharon?
Not yet.
Not yet? Charles, you hear that?
Did you know there were people parked there today?
Yeah.
So what are we going to do about the lanes that are there now? The markings that are there now that restrict the parking? Are we going
to I think we need to get together separately. I mean, we could spend the rest of hours here, I guess, trying to figure this out, but I think three or four of us ought to get together and talk about it.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mayor.
Can we ask public safety to ignore the parking situation?
Oh, no, we're not telling public safety that.
Never tell public safety not to enforce the law.
And that, of course, the Highway Patrol could come through that also.
We need to do this sort of expeditiously.
Yeah, I think we certainly do.
Yep.
So thank you all very much for your comments and your interest and all that. Okay, the next item we have is item 6. Approval to proceed with the design and the appraisal of the city-owned property at 139 Newberry Street, Southwest, using capital projects sales tax CPST 3 funds. Ms. Labib.
Mayor, thank you. As we discussed with item number 4, the packed office building at 139 Newberry Street, we had a committee meeting on August the 21st to discuss the future of the currently city-owned building at 139 Newberry Street Southwest. And after input from the committee and citizens, consensus was reached on several items.
work with a design professional or an architect to create a conceptual design for a new building to cost that would cost up approximately $5,000, and then conduct two appraisals of the property to ensure we have appropriate determination of the value of the property, as council requests whenever we're looking to sell or purchase property. And this would put this estimated cost at $12,000. So for council approval is to use up to $12,000 of CPST3 funds we have received on hand to create a conceptual design and have two appraisals conducted for this property.
Okay. So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
All right, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 7, notification to City Council regarding change to our peddler's permit procedure.
Yes, this is, Mayor, just a notification to Council. Our current City Code Section 28-2 requires individuals that want to peddle or solicit door-to-door within our city to be screened. And until recently, we were able to use the SLED NCIC database, but now the FBI, this type of screening does not meet FBI requirements. So we have our public safety has researched and found that we can use the National Background Screening Service to meet the city code requirements. There is a $15 fee for this per screening, which we would require the applicants to pay. And again, this our city attorney and city solicitor and staff attorney, Paige Tiffany, has reviewed this and agrees that this change in a procedure does not require a city code change. We're just notifying council that our permit, peddler's permit procedure of the background check has changed.
Okay, sir. All right. Do we need to vote on that?
No, sir. It's just for council's information.
Okay. Let me just make a couple of comments. First of all, we should send our appreciation to the FBI for once again coming through and costing us money for no good reason that I can see. I've had some of the people coming to the front door that are young children, and they don't have a driver's license. I mean, is there a provision in this process for the young people, the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, the band people? That, I mean, they need permits, do they not?
I'll let the Chief Barranco can address that.
I wonder how much this is costing the municipalities around the country. $15, my God.
There's some exclusions for nonprofits like Girl Scouts and that kind of stuff. So I have not come across that over the last 2 years being issues. They do notify us when they're going to be in the area, though.
Okay, thank you.
What about candidates seeking political office?
We're not.
Are they considered?
We're not.
Well, you're selling yourself.
Well,
it's not a service or a good.
No, that's, we're not peddlers.
I don't know about that.
Not all the time.
Been insulted.
Say he's a beggar, but not a peddler.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Is any other information to be shared?
I just have one other item just to remind council that September the 18th, which is a week from Thursday at noon, as noted in issues and updates, we do have the meeting with the members of the Hitchcock Woods Foundation, but the location has changed. It is at the Chamber of Commerce now, not at the not next door in room 204, to hear an update from Dr. Idson about his work he's doing with the runoff into Hitchcock Woods.
And I think we're all going to get an invitation to the senior extravaganza the day before.
That is correct.
Stuart, follow on that. What was the total cost of that project? Was it $16 million?
Which project specifically?
Clemson.
I would have to look that up. I would have to get that figure for you, Ms. Price, and send it to council.
Like, thank you.
Today's the 8th.
Okay. 17th. All right. We are adjourned.
Sir, I've got some papers for you to sign for that FAA.
You get this thing? Okay. I have no idea what it was for. Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Everything's signed.
I signed the papers.